It has been the one song of those who thirst after absolute power, that the interest of the state requires that its affairs should be conducted in secret. But the more such arguments disguise themselves under the mask of public welfare, the more oppressive is the slavery to which they will lead. Better that right counsels be known to enemies than that the evil secrets of tyrants should be concealed from the citizens. They who can treat secretly of the affairs of a nation have it absolutely under their authority, and as they plot against the enemy in time of war, so do they against the citizens in time of peace.
One, two.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to this special March 11th, 2006 episode of From the Bunker here on RevereRadioNetwork.com. Now, tonight we have a very special guest with us. Tonight we have Mr. Michael Tesserian. Now, as most of you already know, Michael is a profound researcher and speaker on the true origins of mankind. Now, Mr. Tesserian is best described as a teacher's teacher, a man with a deep, profound spiritual understanding of who we really are and what we face ahead in this countdown to 2012. Thank you for joining us tonight here at the bunker, Michael.
Not a problem, Thomas. It's lovely to be on your show. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Oh, thank you. Anytime. So anytime you have any information or new information for us, please feel free to come on. So,
thank you.
We're going to be talking about the Maya prophecy and your research that you've, you know, you found, and you know what. What are we looking for as far as a 2012 point that we're coming to very quickly and we're in the midst of, and this very important Pluto alignment of this year? And what are we needing to watch for on this?
Well, there's a ton of things we need to watch for. This countdown has not only been, well, first of all, the fact that there is a, you know, particular end date or end of history type of date, like a sort of a zero hour, is how some people have described it, 2012, has not been of general interest to the general public. That's the first thing we need to understand. It's not the masses of mankind or anything that has ever, you know, paid this particular constellational event any type of attention, nor has the general public at large paid any kind of astrological idiom any attention. So when we're talking about any kind of astrological phenomena like this, or astronomical phenomena, I personally believe that it affects all mankind, but the individuals who have been very much studying this and whom it impacts more are the secret societies like the Illuminati and the Freemasons. It's these individuals who have been, you know, looking to this date more specifically, because it has a lot to do with them, and it has a lot to do with the hierarchy of control that they operate in the world. The rest of mankind, you know, really basically, to be quite honest with you, couldn't care less about any of this stuff, and only will when they see some type of physical manifestation or some sort of trauma, you know, that takes place, maybe because of it or whatever, then there'll be a sort of a wake-up call. So in my reading of the Maya prediction, I am more concerned with the fact that who has in fact been tracking this. It's certainly not the ordinary people of the world. I mean, obviously, a few researchers like myself have been paying attention. But who really is impacted, you know, by this phenomena is more the government structures, the world order type of phenomena. So yes, we're going to see these effects. I already believe we are seeing the effects on the personal, domestic, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners have, probably already noticed this. This is what this whole Bush thing is happening right now. The changes in the economic and militaristic structure of the Western world. All of this is part of this new phase or end cycle that we find ourselves in. So even though the average person doesn't know about the effects or isn't particularly concerned, the leaders, the power elite, are absolutely, completely aware of what this means, that there's a closing cycle is coming upon us. They know what that will mean. They are preparing for that cycle so that they themselves continue to be empowered and that the rest of the human race is disempowered. So my work, of course, is not some New Age, pontificating about some vague astrological, malarkey. It's very much a wake-up call to people that, look, something is taking place. The leaders are aware of it. If you need to get aware of it, because it's going to impact the most intimate parts of your life, the world that you have been living in, the world that your forefathers have been living in, that your grandparents have built and created, is passing away. It is not going to be the end of nature. That's not what 2012 is about, but it may be the end of history as we know it, because man has created history. And as all the ancient philosophers knew, history is a living thing that is born, it rises to its peak, and then it comes to its close. This is the message of the ancient druids. It's the message of the Maya. It is certainly the message of the Brahmins in the Vedic tradition. Every culture, the Native American Indians, you name it. It's not some new concept to the New Age movement. This is an old and ancient understanding. Plato understood it. Vico understood it. The great historians have understood it, that histories of civilizations open, they come to their peak, and then they close. There is a sort of a mini, there's cycles within cycles, and there are these historical cycles. So my work is very much an emphasis on that, that we are now approaching the end of something, just in the same way that the scholar Jordan Maxwell has talked about the coming of the age, the end of the age of Pisces and the opening of the new age of Aquarius. All of these things that even the Bible talks about of the coming of the end of the age, of course they don't help us to explain what they mean by that, but certainly they're right on that level, that an age, a particular cycle of time, is coming to its end. The Mayans didn't dream up this stuff or prophesize it. They understood celestial movements, and they knew simply, just like you would know if you cooked a particular meal, how long to give that meal before you know that it's going to be ready before it gets burned. Well, in the same way, they just said, hey, we know that, there's going to be 13 cycles, and then in about 2000, in the year 2000 AD, there'll be, the coming of the closing of the cycle. They just knew that, because that's how they were measuring the cosmos. And we now, in this world, find ourselves living in that time, and that's why it's of great interest. And there is a lot of homework to be done, but the most important thing is, of course, just to realize that this thing is taking place, to cut through all the New Age malarkey that is surrounding it, and get to the real core of what this thing means. Because nature has her cycles. We call them a year. You have people out there who don't believe any of this stuff about, the 2012 and any of these astrological phenomena, and yet they'll be certainly happy to tell you that a year has 12 months, 52 weeks, and has four seasons. Well, then it's just the same thing up the fractal a bit. There are these larger cycles, and we happen to be in a closing one, and that closing one has the most incredible importance. The work I've been looking into, I cannot even stress how important the next 7 years are,
Is it going to be a restructuring completely, obviously, of society as we know it, but what do you believe about the human DNA? All your work into that, do you believe that it will actually restructure that way, or a different frequency maybe? Or
that's not my concern too much. It is and it isn't, because, what we need to worry about is not DNA, but consciousness. After all, DNA is ruled by consciousness. It's an aspect of consciousness. DNA, or the helix, or the chromosomes, I am very much opposed to the way that the DNA is even presented to us in media programs, where they always show it as some sort of Lego set, or some sort of interlocking mechanical, little Lego set floating in hyperspace. We have to be very conscious and aware of the lie of that, and realize that this is not, in fact, what DNA either looks like or is. DNA is nothing but a series of vibrations. DNA is nothing but a encodation of energy. And we must understand that when people are pictorializing it in, graphics on the television or whatever, that's purely a artistic rendition. The truth about DNA is that it is a form of consciousness. So when we're talking about these changes that are coming, which will affect consciousness dramatically, then absolutely you're right. Because those changes are affecting human consciousness, then absolutely the follow-through from that is that the human biology may in fact change. But that's not my main concern. That would be more of an after-effect, and a lot of people are speculating upon it. I know that Greg Braden and Carlos Barrios and a lot of the other 2012 scholars have been, you know, mulling over that and wondering if there's going to be a phase shift from the strands of DNA that we have now. Maybe there'll be an upgrade or what have you. And these, to me, are of much less concern. I am concerned more about the psychology of human beings and what will happen within that framework.
Very interesting. I couldn't totally agree with you more, though. I mean, yeah, very much so. I love your explanation on that. I mean, as in everything, it's like it's so... I mean, you educate me and I'm sure, you know, all my listeners so much on, you know, all this great information that you've given us already. How should we prepare ourselves spiritually for this restructuring?
Well, you see, first of all, carry on from the previous question, it is a great interesting concern about the DNA, but as I'm saying, it's just one has to realize that that is what's called an epiphenomenon. It'll be interesting concept, but we have to be very careful of how the media and even some of these other authors tend to distract us by getting us into, oh yeah, what will happen with the DNA, you know, and we get sort of caught up into that world and then we don't even deal with or attend to much, much more serious concerns. And that leads to your question about what mankind should do. My answers to that, I am very solution oriented, so I put a great deal of emphasis on what people should do, as opposed to just stating the problems over and over and over again. I think the 20th century, I always call the 20th century the problem think time. And I call the 21st century the solution think time. That this is a time when, my God, we should already know what all the problems are. I'm assuming that absolutely even a newcomer to these subjects is aware of what the problems are. So I tend to not always overstress the problems, militaristic, sociological, sexual, gender, whatever the problems of our world. I think they're staring us in the face. The 21st century is the time to start looking for grassroots solutions. Now, when it comes to solutions, again, one has to be very cautious that too many scientists, too many in the New Age are sending out messages of very advanced, very high-fluting, abstract kind of answers. I don't come from that place at all. I think that the answers that we need, the remedies that we need, are of the grassroots variety. So people can just sit back and breathe. And don't get all upset, you know, or stressed out about, my God, what are we going to do? And, you know, everything looks just hopeless. Absolutely not. The answers to whatever kind of calamity that there is out there in the world or in our lives are very simple. Our forefathers have invented those solutions. Our forefathers have implemented those solutions. And we have, as a human race, at least got this far because of the application of those solutions. So it's, you know, as bad as we are, the human race, we wouldn't have even survived this long had the you know, especially through all the world wars and the calamities and the earth changes and you name it. So, you know, let's people have a little bit of optimism and not to fear things immensely, because there is a tremendous spirit within humanity. And what we need to do is, instead of looking at these things as problems, as to look at them as opportunities to learn and opportunities to grow. Look at them as challenges and don't fear to leave the comfort zone, because this is... Every external thing that you get involved in, every external conflict that you get absorbed in, everything that's going on in your external life is really a way or a means that fate has created for you in order for you to learn about yourself. So it's not like, oh my God, here's another, you know, stress thing happening to us or happening to America, or here's something, you know, that's coming to my door that's just another big problem. Life never throws at you what you cannot handle. So all of these things are means and methods for human beings to find out who and what they really are. Because the normal tendency of human beings is to kind of roll over and go to sleep and not bother. So fate has to bring us in certain conflicts, because that's the only way that we now have left it to discover certain things about ourselves. Because we've been too decadent, too apathetic, too narcissistic, and too nihilistic for too long now.
Well, especially...
Yeah,
especially American society. I mean, it's quite disgusting how... Well, how materialistic and how materialistic orientated Americans are in a whole. And it's sad. And I just don't quite, I never have understood that.
So. Well, let's look at it this way. It was a cycle. It was a phase that people needed to go through. I have a lot of repulsion towards it as well. But then my reason clicks in and goes, look, hang on a minute. The country's only 200 years old. The people who came here were the beaten and the bruised and the bloodied from Europe. Peasants, farmers, slaves, serfs, homeless people, people who could not stand the tyranny of the great dynasties and the abuses of the royalty and the feudal systems in England and Ireland and all throughout Europe, okay? So these individuals came here, and when the pressure is off and the sort of floodgates were opened, people did do things that were horrendous. Native American Indians had their land taken and their lives taken. Americans became very decadent, like young children, you see, who were given, there's no big daddy overlooking them. So there was all sorts of atrocities and all sorts of things, but in a way, as bad as all that is, historically speaking, it was predictable. If you have people under the gun for thousands upon thousands of years, you've suppressed them, you've cut short their lives so that nobody lives past 25 years, and even if they do, it's a misery. You prevent people from traveling 5 to 6 to 10 miles away from their feudal villages under pain of death. You have the lords and the barons and the clergy and the churches and the bishops and the kings with their divide and rule, you know, strategy, with their crown and gown, as it's called, or monarchy and theology, crushing the human spirit. Then you're pushing people out because life is so unbearable. Then they come over to this country. They feel freedom for the first moment in time. It's like opening, you know, an asylum or opening a prison and just saying, go have at it. You have total amnesty. Of course there's going to be utter chaos and delinquency and all sorts of criminality. That doesn't really mean that the person themselves is a criminal. They're just acting in a dysfunctional way, but there's a reason for that, because they've been artificially suppressed in their libido for thousands upon thousands of years. Lord Tennyson, Aleister Crowley, many other philosophers and prophets from early times predicted this. They predicted the wars. Nietzsche predicted the coming wars, because he saw that man was a repressed animal and that he was in fear of it. But he also said, well, you know, this is what humanity has to go through and do. They have to club each other. They have to rape and mutilate and rend and drink themselves and party to the, you know, party on down to the end, because they're trying to expatiate and exercise their own spirit, because they're going buck mad because they've been suppressed. Well, I think that time is coming to the end now, that this reprehensible Dionysian debauched cycle is sort of phasing out. People have, you know, had all of the women, wine, and song that they can handle. And now, again, there's a quest for maybe something new. The New Age movement, perhaps, is a certain sign of that, even though it's a pretty, in itself, dysfunctional way of going about it, in my opinion. But nevertheless, you know, there's a lot more free thinking than there's ever been. There's a lot more rebellion than there's ever been. We have the Internet. We have more people thinking freely. We have more people tuning in to read the Noam Chomskys of the world and to pick up the underground magazines and the underground information. We have radio stations like yourself and individuals like you who you couldn't be doing your work in a million years. Even in the 1950s, you've been shouted down. You'd have never been able to do it, especially in the European context. So we, in fact, are moving towards a period of time where the ordinary person is operating from a little bit more iconoclastic, a little bit more free-thinking, you know, vantage point. And of course, again, there will be the fragmentation, there will be the eccentricity, and perhaps even the debauchery that comes with all of that, because as an old cycle finishes, a new cycle begins, and there's always an unsteadying action. So yes, America has been perpetrating some terrible crimes, but the crimes that I'm more concerned of is not blaming the average individual who worked very hard to formulate and create this country. The Scots-Irish, the Anglo-Saxon people, and a lot of other first-generation immigrants. What my concern is not them. But as you know, if you've been tuning into my free web stream on the website where I talk on the origins of evil, it is the enemies of America that are now in the White House and have been for a long time, certainly since Roosevelt and probably before. These individuals are not American. They don't serve America. They serve the same royal dynasties and elites of Europe who once upon a time had their ass kicked and were sent out of America during the War of Independence. Well, they didn't take no for an answer, and they returned again, you see, and have been operating in the American milieu, but from behind the scenes, as we keep using that term, behind the scenes, and people go, what do you mean, but hidden masters and behind the scenes? Well, these are very, very legitimate and accurate terms. It's because there is a covert operation, because you have enemies. if you didn't have enemies, your forefathers, your American presidents would not have said that when you swear an oath of allegiance that you have to say, I will protect the country from enemies foreign and domestic. They wouldn't have been saying that if they didn't know for sure that there were certain things as domestic enemies. And people need to go onto my website and check out the free web stream I have there, specifically the one called Origins of Evil, and I'll go into greater detail of what I mean by that. Because you have had enemies in these shores for many years, and it's these individuals who are the real perpetrators of the crimes against the rest of the world, and they're not to be confused with America. So when people say, America does this, America does that, I go, excuse me, stop. No, America does not do that. The enemies of America do that. And those enemies are first of all, stabbing America, and then they're going to the Iraq and to Afghanistan and to everywhere else in the world, or Grenada. But don't lay that on the door of America. Lay that at Capitol Hill. Lay that at Camp David. Lay that at the door of the Fabian Masonic elites that rule America and are first killing that country. Don't just blame all America or all Americans. So I make this very clear when I do my talks, is that yes, America is the first casualty of the forces that I'm talking about. And those forces are run from New York, yes, and they're run from London, and they're run from Venice. But it is absolutely, absolutely wrong. And I get this a lot when I go to Europe, and people are, you know, sort of cursing America out. And I put them right, and I go, listen, the ordinary American person is struggling, is hardworking, doesn't like these governments, and know that they're also being victimized endlessly by these forces. They have so many laws, they can hardly move or open a business. They're strangled themselves on all sides by a Federal Reserve, which is a completely illegal. The courts are totally against them. It's becoming a police state. They have the most sadistic people in government. Have some pity on the American people, too. Don't just blame all the Americans for causing your problems. And then they get it. Then there's a more positive response. They go, okay, yeah, well, I see that. And this also has to be understood, is we're not indicting Americans in general. Far from it. If this country didn't have the burden of these sadists, my God, as it used to be, the American people are capable of amazing things, absolutely amazing things. We wouldn't have had the Walter Russells or the Nikola Teslas, you see, or the geniuses that we've had, like the Louis B. Farnsworth and all the tremendous inventors, and Howard Armstrong, who created FM radio. You know, we're sitting here talking on radio. It was an American genius that created the FM radio. It was an American genius that made the tube in the television so that people could, you know, learn from that. It was other inventors that created the film strip and so forth and so on. Look at the genius of people like Walt Disney. And the list goes on and on and on. So this has to be understood, that if these things are not happening now, it's because there's an overt action. You have a virus operating in the body politic, as Lieutenant Colonel James Bo Greitz has said many times. And once you're able to identify what the real virus is and deal with it, then so many other things in the body politic start going right again, and health comes to the system. Health comes back. So that is where we're at right now. We're in a healing cycle. So as dark as it gets, it's like nature is almost being the nurse. You know, when you have a plaster, they know that the best way to heal you is the one short, sharp shriek method. Well, that's what America is now undergoing, is the shriek method. The plaster has to come off. The blinkers have to come off. Americans are going to have to understand what politics is really all about, who is running the shop, and realize who these people are, who is their funders, how they're operating in the political and social domain, so that you can identify them and finally overcome them and get rid of them. Because I believe that their last days are coming. I totally believe that the last days of these dark, pernicious, sadistic, cruel, inhuman forces is on its way. And that's what 2012 is really all about. So the rest of the New Age stuff doesn't interest me that much. My concern is about something much higher and much greater than that.
Well, if 2012 can bring us a cleansing of all the administrations since I've been alive, and I was born in 1970, and I can guarantee the previous administrations, this country, like you said, I mean, we are run by a bunch of tyrants, and they're sadistic, evil people. And, you know, it's time people stand up in this nation. It doesn't need to be a violent revolt at all. It's like you said, you can vote them out real easy. And if not, vote them out, impeach them. They are criminals. Call them for what they are.
They are criminals. There are legal ways of getting rid of them. And even if we were to write them out, it's still not violence, because these people are the perpetrators of the greatest violence. Therefore, you know, to defend oneself is not an act of violence. It's like one of the things I do agree that Adolf Hitler said is that you can't be treasonous towards the... You can't meaning at all. So, you know, we have to take back the power that they have taken from us, because as I keep saying to audiences all over, they do not come and take our power, we give it away. We give it away by not strengthening ourselves legally. We strengthen ourselves by ignorance as to who the enemy really is. The country is only about 200 years old, and already, unfortunately, the lymphocytes aren't working. The body politic has become numb. It's like Gulliver in Gulliver's Travels, you know, these little beings, the Lilliputians, who are these tiny, minute individuals, they tie the big giant Gulliver down on the beach. And Gulliver wakes up to find that he cannot even budge an inch because he's been tied down by all these little tiny people. Well, that's who these George Bushes and Cheneys and Perlmans and Wolfowitzes are. They're the scum and the rubbish of Europe. They're henchmen, lieutenants for these dynasties. They're sadistic, evil, merciless, cruel, inhuman individuals, and they've tied America down. America is Gulliver. But the story goes that Gulliver, you know, finally breaks his chains, and then he just sweeps these people like dust off of his shoulders. And one of these days, America will rise, and that's what it's going to do to these people. America shouldn't be in fear of these people. These are the people who are in fear of us. That's why they're called a hidden elite. That's why they say they're the secret masters, or they work from behind the scenes. Of course they work from behind the scenes, because they knew if for one moment the American people knew what was going on, that they would completely and utterly just deal with them. I mean, there is an actual quote, you know. Let me see if I can find it. It's incredible. It's a quote from George Bush, actually. Do you remember that quote where he actually said, if people were ever to understand what we have done in this country, they chase us down the street with axes?
Oh, yeah, that was George Bush Sr. I remember that. Yes,
remember that?
I do.
Yeah, I have that quote somewhere. I think it's on the website, where he literally openly, in front of a media person, actually said that if the American people ever were to discover what, you know, we have done, they would literally chase us down the streets with axes. And that's absolutely, it couldn't be more correct. It's the fact that I believe we're living in the age where the crimes, not just of these latest tyrants, but my work certainly is to bring people the information of the kind of criminality that has been going on for a long time, so that they have the facts. Because if you have the facts, and that means you've read the manual. And if you've read the manual, then you can take easy action. When people think, oh my goodness, what am I to do? Everything sounds very difficult. It's usually because they haven't simply yet read the manual. And of course, if you haven't read the manual, then things look very, very difficult. But once you see what it is, once you understand history as it's presented to you, then you go, oh, okay, I see now what to do. Okay, I can handle that. Our forefathers did it before. Without any type of modern conveniences, 3% of the people of America in the War of Independence, you know, stood up and fought the most mighty tyrants that Europe could muster. And that was only 3-6% of the whole nation here. It can be done. It always will be done, because there's just these laws.
Well, there are good things to look forward to. I can agree with that. So the sooner the better, I could say. So.
And absolutely.
Definitely. So that's definitely something to look forward to, this transition period. I mean, I do find more people waking up. I find some definite earth changes happening. You know, as far as the planetary alignments, I mean, I know your work is, you know, just immense when it comes to that.
Right.
When it comes to this Pluto alignment this year, you know, what is so significant about this? Explain to my listeners, you know, what is so significant about this alignment, and what do we look for in this alignment?
Well, again, to carry on the thing about the healing, is that I believe that it's very, very important that one of the things that we do, and it is a spiritual thing, is to learn to look at life as it really is. In the Origins of Evil web stream that people can see on my website, and it's free, they can go in there and click on that and listen to that talk that I did last year, and we filmed it. I make this point in there, and I make it a lot. We have to understand that people, the human race, edits. Man edits reality. He doesn't see reality as he really is. He's conditioned to edit it. In fact, the ego is basically an editor. In order to have ego stability, in order to live in this one season world, that we love to live in, where we don't see reality as it really is, and we always want to live on the sunny side of the street and always have it summer all day long. You see, this is the kind of nature of the mind, is to not see the dark underside of human nature, to not see the injustices, to pretend that they don't exist. Psychologists know, for instance, that the ego is just a mass of defenses. In fact, that's why we call them ego defenses. The ego is a muscle made of energy. But you can think of it like a human muscle, like your bicep. It's just a muscle, only it's a muscle made of energy. And it basically has two functions. Just like a muscle has contraction and retraction, so does the ego. And the ego is a mass of defenses, a mass of sensors. What is happening now is that slowly, 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 it's not so much that outer life is changing, it's that consciousness is changing. We have to develop our minds so that we start to see life as it really is. This is a very healthy thing, and I think that most people want to do it anyway. They're sick of living with a box around their heads. This box is placed on our heads at school. It's placed on in our heads by our parents, who, again, maybe because they're too much in allegiance to a certain religion, or they are coming from an ethnic type of background which limits their vision, then the child is born, and it's like Pink Floyd say, you know, you're going to be comfortably numb. And this comfortably numb is the absence of peripheral vision. It's the absence of seeing life as it really is. It's extremely important for health, social health, and for our own personal spiritual development to see life in a sort of a less edited way. I think we're always going to edit, and a certain amount of editing is necessary. But we now, the way forward is to see things as they really, really are. If you see the dirt, then you can clean it. It's like you think there's no dust in the air, right? And then you open the door and it's a bright sunny day, and you sometimes, you know how you see it when the sunlight beams into your house and suddenly you see the air filled with dust that you normally wouldn't see what it is you're inhaling?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Right, well, this is what is happening. 2012 is a turning up of light, but it's not the kind of light that we normally know. It is partly scientific, so if people are listening to this who have more of a science basis, then the term that they need to know is photonic. Photonic light is the highest kind of light that exists in the world. The phenomena that we know as light, sunlight, whatever kind of light, well, the highest manifestation of that is created from the electron, and that's photonic light. So there's a scientific component of this as well. But light also has metaphysical properties. That's why the spiritual people, the Christian people, always use the term light. They use this word and don't even think, why are we identifying God or spirit or truth with the word light? Well, they're going to find out. In this next 7 years, you mark my words, the human race is going to discover why the term light has ever been attributed or is equivalent or is an epithet for spiritual things. Why do the Illuminati call themselves the Illuminati? Why was Lucifer called the son of light or the son of the morning? We have a few questions here about something very important. And if people go to my astrotheology pages on the website, they're going to hear the whole story. They'll read the whole story because light has many different kinds of properties. Light has not just got one property or two properties like heat and warmth. Metaphysically, light is an incredible thing and has many types of properties. The property I'm most thinking of is this. Everyone says they want the light, but very few people want to see the dirt that the light is going to shine, show up on them. So part of the ego, part of the mind, reaches out for the light or aspires towards the light, but then the hand recoils as soon as that light says, ah, but look at the dirt on you. So if you're asking about a spiritual message or what's our message for the future, is to realize that. I am a teacher, but I cannot tell a person what to do, nor would I ever attempt to try to tell somebody what to do. But I can tell them this, that you better be aware that as the light intensifies in this cosmos, like the dimmer, somebody's turning a dimmer up so gradually, and if you turn the dimmer up very gradually in a room, the shadows start to fade away, don't they? But you don't notice it right away because somebody's doing it very, very gradually. Well, the spiritual force is doing that. It's turning up the light. Not the light that we identify with ordinary daily light, but a certain kind of light, the kind of spiritual light that starts to show the shadows. Eventually, it'll cast those shadows away. But in the meantime, that light is going to feel sort of irritating to a lot of people. And you know something, Thomas? I think that's good. I'm glad. I want to see people irritated by it. You know why? Because the most irritated people are going to be the most toxic people. And I prefer that they stand out because they've been hiding behind the mask for millions of years. They've been hiding behind that mask, these degenerates, for hundreds upon hundreds of years.
I love how you put them as vampires. I mean, it's
yes.
And psychic so
vampires
correct.
Is part of it. And the kind of vampires we've got ruling this world. I am celebrating the fact that this is taking place. I do not feel negative about it at all, and every good person who's in the, listening to the sound of our voices should sigh with relief, should go out in their garden and take a glass of champagne and hold it up towards the galactic center and say, thank you. I am all for it. I don't care if zombies are running in the streets, or I don't care if people are cutting each other's heads off or going berserk in the world, because it may in fact be happening that way. But you know, the good person should be happy about it, because finally the roach cleaner is on his way. Finally, nature is a spring clean cycle is coming. So the good person has absolutely nothing to fear. The individual who's been close to their center, who has been a moral person, who has tried to do the most good as opposed to the most evil, who has not climbed upon other people to get ahead, and who has stayed very true to their source, hasn't got a thing in the world to worry about. They may feel a certain topical frustration or discomfort, naturally, as the light goes up, but it'll be handleable. The ones I'm worrying about and concerned about are the ones who are going to really, really be discomforted by the fact that the spiritual light is turning up. And we're going to be noticing those people in our own lives, not just on Capitol Hill, but in our own domestic lives. People need to watch out. So my message is both a relational one and a domestic one as well, because we're going to be finding even people that we have taken for our betters. We're going to find people who've been posing as teachers. We're going to find people who've been posing as our lovers, our friends, our allies. Also, when the mask starts to slip, and this is going to happen this year, because Pluto, which is the planet that removes the mask, which exposes all the dirt that people carry around, and is the lord of the light, it's on its way. It's going to be crossing galactic center, as you know, in November of 2007. So I am trying to tell the protagonists, be aware of this, so that when the antagonists start to reveal who they really are, you're not so shocked. And if you don't get that kind of warning, then you will be shocked. And unfortunately, that could spur a lot of good people to do some pretty stupid things. Just understand that Mother Nature is coming with her broom, and the roach cleaner is pulling his truck around the corner of the block, and he's coming up the street, and there's nothing to worry about, because the roaches are finally going to be cleaned, and this time they're going to be cleaned right. So don't despair, and don't get into despair, and don't become a repository for the despair of other people who are in despair for a good reason, because their time has come. So all of these things need to be noted. Because if you don't notice it, then you will be in panic, and then you will be in knee-jerk reaction, and then you'll misinterpret, and then you won't understand what's happening, and then you'll think you're being personally attacked. So you have to be very, very cautious about what is going on.
So what do you think George Bush's message was to the people, or to his cronies, I should say, when he was speaking of, wanting to do a Pluto mission and what have you? I mean, obviously it has something to do with this alignment.
Yes, it does. It's symbolic. It's symbolic language. He's not talking about a physical mission. He's using coded language. People, when they're listening to the leaders, have to be very, very conscious that a lot of the things that they say, not only what they say, but even the clothes that they wear, the hand gestures that they use, the places that they appear. Like if you go onto William Henry's site, WilliamHenry.net, he has a whole symbolic page of symbolism there that shows you that the very positions in which the presidents stand, the symbols that are often behind them when they do public meetings, are also very important. They're telling you something. The murals on the Rockefeller Center, the murals that are on, the state buildings. And what you're talking about, absolutely correct. They use spiritual metaphor. They blah, 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 they're talking about something that you're not paying attention. Actually, they're speaking in symbolic language about something, because in these satanic pacts that these individuals are involved in, there is a certain code or a certain clause that you must tell the victim what you're doing to him or to them. But you can choose the manner in which you tell them. So the Big Brother agents do in fact tell us what is going on. The sheep is told that they're being fleeced, but not perhaps in words, but in symbolic language, in numerology, in symbolism, in colors, in rhythms, in all sorts of other idioms that most of the human race are completely illiterate in. My work, again, is an attempt to make people literate in this. So when he was talking about that, Pluto alignment, whenever they mention planets or celestial events, you have to, then you need to, perk up, because they're telling you something very, very important. This is part of the doublespeak, but they also use esoteric cues, esoteric ciphers, to let the human race know albeit subliminally, what is really going on.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, as far as subliminal messages and, you know, like you say, you know, just the corporate logos themselves, let alone all the things that are used in the media during speeches, it's quite fascinating. And, you know, I consider myself even brainwashed to a point. Still, you know, I mean, I'm open to, you know, a lot of things anymore, but I still consider myself very much so brainwashed.
How can it be any other way?
Yeah.
It's not our fault. We have a barrage. It's like somebody has been dumpsters. It's like dumpsters coming 24 hours, 24/7, dumping garbage into your house. My God, you'd be exhausted in a few hours even trying to clean out the mess. So it's lifelong. It's lifelong. I mean, it would be wonderful, wouldn't it, if as soon as we entered into a school, it was a loving and truthful environment in which our teachers, quote-unquote, these people who love patting themselves on the back as if they're really doing anything, it would be wonderful, wouldn't it, if these people really educated us in the mystery of life? Hell no. So what do we have to do? We got to wait till our 20s, our 30s, our 40s, so we pick up the slack on our own and try desperately to, you know, spring clean all the garbage that this world and this society and our neighbors and our parents and our priests and our politicians have been dumping into our consciousness. The greatest philosophers of the world have despaired against it. What is the average person, you know, going to do, especially the ones who are totally ignorant, who don't even know that this is happening? So, yes, it's an awesome, endless thing, but it's necessary because psychic hygiene, the word sanity and the word sanitize are connected for a reason. There is a reason why the word sanity and the word sanitize, you know, are coming from the same word root. And I'll tell you what the reason is because it's understood that to be sane, you have to be psychically hygienic. However, as I say on all my work, we clean our beds, we clean our clothes, we clean the yard, we wash our cars, we wash our bodies, we shower. We would never dream of eating off the same dirty plates twice in a single day. Why then is the emotions never cleaned? Everything in our life is cleaned. Yet the emotions, the psyche, which is the foundation of our whole being, is toxic, full of all sorts of debris. All sorts of debris. It goes on. It's not just big crimes and immoral people, even moral people. It's just a natural buildup. There's nothing wrong with it. Dirt collects on anything. You can't scream and say, oh my God, I wish dust didn't, you know, gather on my table. I wish fruit didn't rot or cars didn't rust. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying blame nature. I'm just saying this phenomena happens. So then you have to have the detergent and the ways to go around and clean it. It's very simple. It's like we said at the beginning of the show. The remedies are very easy. It's just you have to know that you now need to apply them.
Well, the truth is definitely a good thing. I mean, it's like I remember when I first got turned on to your work a few years ago, and I was jaw-dropped. It was just, you know, the moment I think it's like, wow, I'm so close to figuring something out, and then it's like, oh, wait a second. There's 300 different aspects of looking at it now, and it's like between your work and Jordan Maxwell and David Icke, I'm just sitting there. I could spend the next 3-4 lifetimes just looking through your three people's researches, and
Well, that's true.
It's incredible, but it's that in itself, just being opened up to the truth. And I personally, you feel it when you do read it, when you feel something that is true, you know it is. And you know, just the way of looking at things anymore is such an eye opener, and it's so, you know, that is cleansing in itself for me. As far as I'm concerned, it feels so much better being awake than it does being closed up, but it's still worrisome in its times.
Well, and it should be. The worry is also a very healthy thing. If a storm comes, say you've been planting an orchard, or you've been planting a beautiful field of crops, and suddenly you're woken up at 4 o'clock in the morning because you can hear the gale coming, which is going to tear up all your young saplings, aren't you immediately in panic? Aren't you immediately in fear? There's a certain kind of fear that is a byproduct of defensiveness. It's important to be in awareness and to be alarmed by this, you know, because this is our life. This is what's happening to the human race. The beauty, the good in the world is being raped, being mutilated. One should feel, angry about that. We have a whole cult in the New Age movement that tells you to not be angry. This is another, you know, fabrication, and I know who's funding the New Age movement, so I'm not surprised that they've seeded all of these lies. But the fact of the matter is that there is a healthy anger. Didn't Christ say, I've come with a sword to divide people so that individuals stand on their own? So we need to be aware that there's a tremendous crime that is taking place, and our reaction towards that crime needs to be urgent. You know, you don't stand outside your house and watch your house burning down, a fire starting in your house, and then say, well, look, I got to go to the shops, but when I come back, I'll get some water and put the fire out. You immediately act. You immediately go and do, you know, try to save your property. Well, this is the kind of reaction. So, yes, you're right. When people like yourself and myself and other people in the world come across this alternative type of information, it's an ambivalent response. We're tremendously elated and ecstatic that we now have our hands on the treasure, the Count of Monte Cristo's treasure, the gold of truth. We're terribly grateful to be in front of that shrine and to be one of the few people, you see, that have come to the altar of the truth. But at the same time, there's intense depression, sadness, misery. We have our heads in our hands, and so we should. We should be in lament. The Celtic people used to play the ancient harp, where they'd play these laments. Their music is considered even to this day to be extremely melancholic. Damn right! Because they know that truth is not wanted in the world, and that the lover will be raped and poisoned, that the saints will be martyred, that the poor will be trodden on. Damn right.
Talk about a country that's been raped. I mean, wow, you know,
right.
Ireland for centuries.
That's
centuries
it.
Over centuries. It's a, you know, an amazing history, which I'd like to get into a little bit with you also, if we could, because
sure.
Wow, your work on the origins of civilization through Ireland are, you know, absolutely amazing. And, you know, another just a brilliant eye-opener and another way of looking at things through history and, you know, what a great guide.
Isn't it? You see, we have so many conspiracies, and I don't fear to ever use that word because that's what they are. They're conspiracies against truth that happen on many levels. Life is not just made from, you know, one particular facet. So we have a social aspect, we have a psychological aspect, we have a religious aspect to life, all of these different threads that make up the great web of life. And on a historical level, there's been just incredible crimes that have been perpetrated. But the truth is only slowly coming out. This whole thing about the Roman conquest of Ireland and the rape of Ireland and the fact that the Pope and the Vatican prevented anybody from traveling, you see, telling you that the world was flat and you'd fall off the edge of the world because they were desperate, that people would never travel to the West. They didn't want people to travel to England and Ireland to find out the high cultures that existed there. The burnings of the great libraries that they then tell you are these libraries in Alexandria and these libraries all over the world. The one thing they don't tell you is that these were Celtic libraries that were run by the Druids, that the Druids were an international organization. The clever scholars came along and tried to put different terms like Phoenician and Philistine and all of these different terms to cover up the truth. But even the truth, as you're referring to on my website, that even the word Jew, the word Judaic, actually referred to the Druidic order. It had nothing to do with the Jews that use that word today. Unfortunately, most Jewish people, like most Christians, are not at all aware of their own heritage. I'm not pointing any fingers. It's not they're consciously ignorant. It's just that this is the way it is. They've been duped themselves. There's not a Jew to this day who can tell you why it is that the Pope wears the yarmulke. There's very few Catholics today who can tell you anything about Judaism. Yet they'll always tell you they don't like it, or they hate it, or this person, they can certainly tell you all the problems they've got amongst each other, but none of them can tell you a damn thing about where these things came from. But and the language gives it away. You know, my work on the Irish origins of civilization is a work that has been carried on again by American scholars. I'm just following in the footsteps of Barry Fell, Commons Beaumont, Connor McDowry, Anna Wilkes. Again, books that have been suppressed, books that are very hard to find, information that's very difficult to find. The whole of America has Celtic ruins that the fake scholars from Princeton and Cornell and from the Smithsonian Institute have been desperately trying to tell people are Native American Indians, even when the Native American Indians are going, no, they're not. They're not ours. You go to any of the Native American Indian groups where these great mounds, like the Ohio Mound is, or where the Anasazi Indians were meant to be, and all the local Indians tell you it is not our work. We did not do this. But we'll tell you who did. They're not even trying to conceal it. The Indians say it's the blonde ones from overseas. It's the men who had the blue eyes, and either the blonde hair or the black hair, but they were tall in stature, right? They had blue eyes, fair complexion, and they were from across the seas. They're the ancestors. They did it. Native American Indians have never hidden that. They're happy to admit it. But the the Smithsonian people, they'll not admit it. The Masonic-controlled university top scholars and fake historians, they'll never tell you this. But as Glenn Kimball, you see, and Barry Fell and other scholars in this country have revealed, and as Commons Beaumont and especially Connor McDowry, who my work very much follows on from, and Augustus Laplanjean, who studied the Maya records in ancient times in the 19th century, these individuals knew that there was commerce between the Old World and the New World, and that America was colonized originally hundreds and hundreds of years before Columbus or the Vikings got here. The Celtic people were here because they were the Phoenicians, the greatest maritimers and the greatest traders and the greatest people in the world, because the word Phoenician comes from an Irish word, the Fenians or the Phoenicians, and the Phoenicians are the builders of Newgrange in Ireland, and just they cunningly, later scholars just cunningly changed the terms, changed the phrases. But the second major city of the Phoenician peoples, right, in the Middle East was called Tyre, T-Y-R-E. That is a corruption of the word Tara in Ireland. The capital city of the Phoenicians is the same name as the capital city of the Druids in Ireland, Tara or Tyra or Tara. It doesn't matter what way you pronounce it, or you just take away a letter or add a letter. This kind of stuff was done.
Wow.
To disguise all sorts of things, so that people would never find out. They just want you to believe that the Druids were some sort of maniacs living in Ireland, and nobody bothered with them, some little Arthurian thing going on over there in England and Ireland, nothing to be, you know, paying any attention to, really. A little bit of mythology, a little bit of fairy folk tales. What nonsense.
The perpetual lie to keep the people dumbed down from the true information and the knowledge of life.
That's right. The Celtic people were like what the Brahmins are today. Brahmins today are accepted as being a great priestly class, you see, and everyone looks to the Brahmins in India and goes, oh my goodness, they're so holy. And they are holy. They're vegetarians. They have a tremendous knowledge of the stars. They live an extremely pure life. Everything from the cooking of the food to the way they walk. Insects. They won't even kill an insect, you see. They have a tremendous language, which is Sanskrit, of course, and then Urdu for the
are they affiliated with the Jains?
The Jains are a sect of the Brahmins.
Okay.
So everyone will look to them and go, oh, I see. Yes, we can accept that the whole of India looks up to and is understanding that there's a Brahmin supreme class there. Well, hang on. I'm just saying exactly the same thing about the Celts. The Brahmins learned it all from the Celts. Sanskrit's closest ancestor language is Gaelic. And the scholars who really know that Sanskrit is not the parent language, but the Gaelic is. This is accepted. The Chinese language Ainu, which is one of the oldest languages in the world, look it up online in a dictionary or go to Wikipedia and put in the word Ainu, A-I-N-U. It's a Japanese, one of the oldest languages in the world, and it will tell you in any reference work that the language to which Ainu language is closest is Gaelic.
Wow.
Just pick up Graham Hancock's book, Talisman, or pick up any of the Graham Hancock books like Underworld. Scholars like him are now finding this out that was known at the turn of the century by other scholars, but unfortunately their books were suppressed. Gaelic was the parent language. Gaelic means that. Gaul is the white ones, the pure ones, the noble ones. In India, Ireland, England, Britain is known as Britistania, right? Britistana, which meant, in Indian, the land of the teachers, the land of the greatest masters. That's Ireland and Britain were known, but even in India, as Britistana, which was known as the place of the great teachers. So just like we see the Brahmins today, or just like we would imagine your shaman and Native American Indian, there was a worldwide movement of colleges that existed that were run by the Druids. They sent their Druid leaders over there. It is well known to anyone who has read on Greek, ancient, what they call pre-Grecian philosophy, especially at the time of Pythagoras, it is an absolutely irrefutable fact that the school of Pythagoras was created by the Druids. This is officially known now. This is not just me saying this. This is absolutely officially known that a Druid by the name of Abaris, A-B-A-R-I-S, Abaris, visited Greece and basically patronized the school of Pythagoras. Because in the Pythagoreans' own words, in the Greek, they say it was a Celtic Druid who appeared with a gigantic bow. He had ridden across Europe on a horse. They say he stood out because he wore long trousers. He was of great stature, and he had a bow, because all the Celtic people, they say, were great bowmen, just like you see Lord of the Rings. Recently, that movie shows you the Celts, the men of the West, were fantastic. The bow was one of their powerful symbols. And this individual was also a master of mathematics and a master of astrology and astronomy and all sorts of flora and fauna. And in the Pythagoreans' own words, they created their schools based on the teachings of the Druids. Now, if it can be admitted that the most advanced Grecian, you know, teacher, Pythagoras, is basically an offshoot of the Druids, then there's your answer. That the Hellenes and the Grecians and the Romans are dependent. Now, when the Roman tyrants rose and created their need, their armies to go out, they made a beeline for Europe. They made a beeline for Britain. Because, you see, they knew that the new power structure cannot rise in the world without the destruction of the old one, which is based on spirituality and the worship of the stars and the worship of the heavens and all of this. So my work is to show that through the Romans, which is now the Vatican, through the great empires of the Habsburgs and these old dynasties that were corrupt in their core, they had to come and annihilate all the Druids. And they did it. They wiped them out, every one to a man. Because they needed that tradition to be destroyed and all the libraries to be burned and all the knowledge to be appropriated in order for this thing we now call Judeo-Christianity, this obscenity, to rise in the world. Because it wasn't going to rise any other way. You know, you couldn't have the two forces ruling in the world. So there was a campaign of genocide, not only to wipe out the Druids, but subsequently then to suppress the role of the Irish. And the Irish is not the way it is spelt. Irish is not with an I, it was with an A. A-R-I-S-H. From the word root Ari, or Arian. That's where the word really comes from. The Arians. And the Arians have got nothing to do also with what we've been told the Arians have been about. 99% of the people who write on the Arians are completely misinformed or they're blatant liars. And it certainly has nothing to do with what Nazi Germany was talking about. It didn't have to do with ethnicity, and it didn't really have to do with race. The word Aria originally meant the ones of noble birth, the ones who worship the heavens, the sun worshippers, the keepers of light. That's what it was. So Ireland was the place that was the land of the Ari. And anyone who's done 5 minutes of homework, let alone anyone who's come to my website or to Jordan Maxwell, or has read any decent books on the history of words, will know what A-R-I meant, or A-R-Y, or A-R-Y-A, which is in India, the Arya got to India. And they say the Aryan invasions of India are legendary, well known. Well, go and ask an Indian person about the visitors, the Arya, and they'll tell you the same thing. That the Arya are the people who composed the Rig Veda, the finest written poems in the world. The greatest, the Puranas, the Vedas, the Shastras, right? The Rig Veda. The greatest poems to divinity. The greatest poems to woman. The greatest poems about their animals. All Indians know the Arya wrote those. Because they were the most sophisticated, linguistically advanced people in the world. But guess what? The Arya, or the Irish, or the Celtic race, that was worldwide after the cataclysms. They weren't just living in Ireland. The purest of them got to Ireland because Ireland was a remnant of old, you know, when Atlantis fell, Atlantis was in the Atlantic Ocean, of course. So the survivors did get to Ireland and England first. Whatever survivors there were, and there wasn't many. People can read my book on Atlantis to find all this out. When the great continents like Atlantis did sink, it was to Ireland and England that most of the original survivors arrived. However, not all the Atlanteans arrived on Ireland. They had, during the cataclysms, they were, you know, dispersed to all corners of the world. So you had groups of these Atlantean Lemurians at all parts of the world, all looking for each other. One, each group wondering if any of the other groups survived. It'd be the same thing today. It's like when that tsunami hit there in Indonesia recently. My God, a small pocket of people that are lost, you know, in a forest or swept away by the waves, you're going to wonder if anybody else is alive, right? Well, it's the same thing in those great times of cataclysms and pole shifts. So it took many millennia for these individuals to coalesce again, and really it didn't really happen. Most of them never got the chance to coalesce again, so what they did was that they set up bases in India, in China, in Japan, in the steppes of Russia, in Norway, in Sweden, in Ireland, you see, and over in South America and in North America as well, because these Lemurians and these Atlanteans have been dispersed to the four corners. It just so happened that on Ireland, a very, very high and pure group, you know, were situated. And therefore, all the countries of the world looked to Ireland for that purpose.
Very interesting.
Yeah, wow. The thing is unbelievable when you get into it. It's just incredible.
That's crazy. Well, let's take a short break so we can have some of our listeners who want to record this, they can make it on CD that way, and we'll come back and talk more about the origins of civilization in Ireland.
Sounds good.
More of this 2012 alignment, maybe take a few questions from some emails I got, and yeah, we'll get right back to you, though. Thanks for staying tuned to us, and we'll catch you on the flip side of this.
Sounds good.
Rise above. Hi, you're listening to Revere Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the second hour here in the bunker on revereradionetwork.com. We have with us Mr. Michael Tesserian. And in the last hour, you were discussing a very interesting subject on the origins of civilization in Ireland. And now you're working on a DVD and book with the Atlantis Alien Visitation Genetic Manipulation, which is a must-read for people who have not got that, and they can get that at Terrascopes.com.
Yeah.
And that's an extremely well-done book, so that's captivating, that's for sure. So now in 2 weeks you have these DVDs coming out. What's going on with those?
Yeah, this is a project that's been long in the works, based on an idea that I had been, as a lot of your listeners, you know, loving these subjects, working in the field of these subjects, have done the Atlantis book, had an overwhelming amount of support for the book and a lot of compliments from all over the world. And I used to sell videos, you know, I used to do the videos and put my message out on video. But you see, the trouble was that a lot of the videos, most of the videos that I had that featured my work were done by other people. And even though these are wonderful people, a lot of them are affiliates and friends. The trouble with the old video thing is that your information is habitually, you know, edited. It's edited for time. It's edited for content. I mean, everyone in the media knows that that is a major problem. And I personally thought it was a very big problem because, of course, you see, the message that I bring, or the message that needs to get out to the world from the real truth, is something that, you know, can't be edited down into a few sound bites like somebody's watching a commercial or an infomercial, or it even fits into the category of normal television viewership. You can't do that. You know, it's just PBS is not going to get up on its hind legs and come to people like us for the information. They're not going to throw millions of dollars at us. And, you know, years and years and years have gone by, and great teachers have come and gone in this country, and the message has not really got out. And anytime you do see anything controversial on TV, or even slightly interesting about the mysteries or about alternative history or information, it's the obligatory, what is it, 55-minute show with about 3,000 commercials, you know, this kind of thing. So then I was looking at these videos and going, look, how do I get this message out? And then, of course, I thought, you know, we're in the digital age. People have DVDs now. Granted, still those DVDs tend to be, you know, pretty commercialistic, and they're 1 hour long usually. Leave us, you know, a lot of programs on television, they're leaving us with more questions than answers. You know, they start off saying, hey, we're going to talk about this, or talk about, you know, the Celts, or talk about Atlantis, or what have you. And then at the end of the show, they tell us that we really don't know anything, and, you know, we're still looking into all of this, and there's so many of these questions, and who one day will probably find the answer. All this nonsense, when in fact we have the answer, you know, the Graham Hancocks, the Michael Cremos, the information is out there. How come nobody's presenting it?
Well, we've been lied to and manipulated for so long that when it is presented to them, they, you know, either you're a quack.
Right.
I mean, look at anybody's work that's in the, you know, any type of, that deals with any conspiratorial type of subject. I mean, usually you're a quack. I mean, I get called a conspiracy theorist all the time. I said, no, they're facts, and the conspiracy's against you.
I know it. And remember, I say this many times to people. It's like, the onus is not on me to prove what I know to be right. The onus is on you to prove what I'm saying is wrong. But see, that's the attitude that Eustace Mullins copped, and he says, you know, come ahead, take me to court. You tell me that I'm talking nonsense, and you take me on head first and see if I can't prove, you know, what I'm doing. He always had that attitude, and it worked for him because nobody ever came to confront him, and nobody ever comes to confront us. Sure, in a talk, when you're in front of an audience, you might get some guy asking an idiotic question or whatever, but on the whole, the big media types do not come and get you embroiled, because they know damn well who's prepared and who isn't. You know, they might try that on somebody who's not so eloquent. They might try that on somebody who's not got a good media sort of feel or a vibe, but they're not going to try it on people like myself or Jordan or, you know, some of the other people in this field, like the Graham Hancock spring to mind, because we're too eloquent. We do have our information, we have our facts, and you give us 30 minutes of TV time and we will change millions of people in this world. And that's what's happening when, you know, people like myself get on the mainstream. So they do not come and take us on head first.
A quick question for you that you might be aware of, you might not. I'm not sure if you'll know the answer to this, but my producer had it for me. And he wanted to know if Jordan Maxwell was a sovereign.
He is a sovereign. He's completely sovereign. He's an expert on that subject. He's one of the leading authorities on that subject. And if anything has brought him a lot of attention from the authorities, it's been his work with that, more than his work with other subject matter. He's got a lot of grief because he, in fact, is an expert in that legal sovereignty. And no, I'm not surprised, because that is one of the areas, you see, that Big Brother protects itself and doesn't want anybody else to emulate. You see, fighting and brawling inside the political pigsty that our imperious masters have created for us, hey, they don't mind you doing that. Are you left wing, are you right wing, are you red, are you blue? You know, that's lovely. They've created that little dialectical little circus. So, of course, if you're running around like a maniac within the political sphere, as unfortunately people have been doing for generation after generation, with the mind-controlled idea that you might be changing something, well, the Big Brother's only too happy to have you think that. But nothing changes, and people should realize by now that's why the world is in the state that it's in. That's why America's in the state that it's in, because that working through the political sphere does next to nothing. In fact, even if you sweat your guts out for the whole of your life to get a few laws passed or a few changes in society, how do you know that the next Johnny isn't going to come and erase them all? So this political pigsty has to be understood as a secret society mechanism. And this is not me saying this. I can prove it from the horse's mouth. They're telling you that if you read the right memoirs and the right records. These individuals who set up these political systems are telling you that this is a way to keep the herd of humanity under control. Now, of the two systems, political and legal, even though legal is also created by the controllers or whatever, of the two systems, legal is much more powerful. And reciprocally, that's why few people know their legal rights. Of the two systems, the one to protect yourself with, and the one to get things done, and the one to make sure that petty tyrants and Hitlers behind desks can't mess with you, is of course the legal system. But what do we see? Everybody knows about the political system, but very few people know even the most rudimentary political protections for their sovereignty, for incorporations, for sovereignty, and all of these kinds of things. You'll go into the street to go to a shop, and you'll be constantly accosted by these people with clipboards asking you, are you going to vote? Do you vote? Hello? Would you like to vote? And I just look at these people in amazement going, and what on earth would I want to be voting for, skull or for bones? And they look at you like you're insane because they don't know anything about it. And I don't usually stop to get into it because that's just not my way. If somebody doesn't ask me, I don't really get into it. But, sometimes during when the season is for the elections, it's so obnoxious. And then, I think to myself, my God, wouldn't it be a wonderful world if these people with the same clipboards were saying, hello, we're putting on a free course, or we have a free internet site, or we have a little TV show, or we'd like to send you literature on your basic legal rights so that you can be empowered as a citizen in this world, so that you realize there's a one-party system, and we're going to give these free courses in your area, or we have internet courses, or we have a little video about your basic rights so that police and judges and all these other people can't affect you. Hello, would you like to sign up for that? Holy shit, then I'd be happy. Then I would say, okay, now we're moving. Because the same protections that protect these pedophiles, these clergy, these Knights Templar, these Cheneys, you see, and all of these people from scandal, they'll never see a day in court. When's the last time you ever saw a priest in court? Even if he gets there, he gets a slap on the wrist, because they're sovereign. They have what's called, corporate soul. And corporate soul is not a corporate thing. Corporate soul is a Vatican thing. It is a religious distinction that Knights Templars have, and a lot of the worst criminals. The reason why these people are able to do white slavery and opium importing and exporting, you see, and get into all these negative things. The reason why America was able to supply Soviet Russia with all the bombs, guns, and armaments to make this fiction called the Soviet Union, and that nobody could stop them doing this, is because they used sovereignty. They went to do it on sovereign bases. The people had sovereignty that you couldn't check what was going on. It was only found out by accident, in fact, that was happening. So all the political machinations that Enron and all of these individuals empower themselves with is open to the ordinary person if they know what they're doing. Now, I'm no expert on it, but I do know about the subject, and people go to my links page on Taroscopes.com, they'll see some more links under the legal section. I would certainly recommend the work of Johnny Liberty.
Yeah.
But there's plenty of other people out there who are looking into this, and of course, I'm not saying that all of these are fail-safe. You have to know what you're doing, and you have to look into it. But even if you don't go for the full sovereignty, like because you're afraid to, wave a red flag to the government, I can totally understand that and sympathize with that. Well, at least then know your basic rights so that some Johnny peace of mind with those kinds of things. At the absolutely, forget about the legal, the political rubbish. Don't bother voting. It's a total joke. It doesn't help at all, and it's designed to wave you in this direction so that you don't actually go and empower yourself. You know, get onto loompanics.com. Loompanics is a great publisher that will, you know, sells very, very difficult to find books on the question of legality and paralegals. And I have got the link on my website at taroscopes.com. People can contact me to find out this information so that they are empowered. This is what the teens, this is what the kids, this is what the average person who's worked for years, enslaved, and then has things taken away from them, and all they need is the most basic type of legal protection. It doesn't mean you have to go to, you know, law school to study all of this. You can find books and internet sites on it and DVDs that will talk people through this. This is what is absolutely crucial because it gives us a little bit of the power that the leaders exploit for themselves and their children.
Yeah, very much so. That's very well put, too. Speaking of websites, Taroscopes.com, that's an amazing website. You guys did a great job putting that together and your other websites as well.
Well, that's all my own work. You know, I did all the designs and the information. It's a, you know, 24/7 job.
Amazing work.
Yeah. And it's very needed because I'm a big believer in the internet. I'm a big believer that can be used spiritually and for awakening. It's nothing more than a tool. I'm not against television or internet. I'm against what comes across it. I'm against who's using it and for what reason, not the medium itself. I think the medium is absolutely essential. You know, if we didn't have television, how would anybody hear the opera or see beautiful art? You know, I mean, you know, not everyone can go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City, you know, or fly over to the Tate Gallery in England. So let's, you know, honor these things, that we have these incredible communicative devices, and not look down at them and not think that, oh my goodness, they're all controlled and I can't have anything to do with it.
Well, I would have never heard of you without the internet, so, I mean.
You see? Exactly. Where would we be? We would be shouting in the dark. We wouldn't have the microphone. The lights would go out and then we'd really have a problem. You know, it would be 1984. So we have this, the Big Brother has squeezed the television and squeezed radio out of existence, and they're squeezing what happened? The internet popped out. This is the magic of life. This is the beauty of life. Out of their squeezing hold, they didn't realize that they were squeezing out yet another individualistic thing, because the spirit of rebellion, the spirit of contradiction, which is what I write about a lot, is not dead, will never die, and the more that these Saturnian, Martian, solar cult forces try to squeeze and beat it to death, what they don't realize is that just creates another, you know, elixir, another thing that will pour out of the unconscious and become created. Now it's the internet. Tomorrow they might try to start controlling that, and go ahead. I'm not afraid of that, because from that again will come another medium that is free. You can't, you know, keep a good idea down. Now my DVDs, my work on the website is this time, it had to wait for this kind of time. It couldn't have been done in the old bricks and mortar way, and also I think that those bricks and mortar ways are very exploitatory. I like the digital kingdom because it's not exploitatory. It's egalitarian. A lot of it is free. I have tons of free information on my website. You know, and as I said about the DVDs, my content was always edited for content, edited for time. So I said, okay, once and for all, I'm going to take this whole matter into my own hands. I'm going to fund it, you know, my own production, create my own productions of these DVDs, and put all my information that I've got out on DVD, which are easy to work with, easy to play. You know, they can be played all around the world, and they're unlimited for time.
That's 65 hours.
Meant, of course, is what, yeah, it meant that it wasn't going to be the usual, you know, BS one-hour nonsense on television. It was going to expand.
Well, yeah, I mean, I looked at it when, you know, I first caught that you were coming out with these DVDs. I remember emailing you on them, and I was just, me and my old roommate both were in awe. It was like, oh my, you know, I mean, look at all of this coming out. I mean, it was amazing. It's going to, like I said, I'm going to have to spend close to a year checking all this out. But what a great accompaniment with that book. So it's,
well, you see, it will, people will enjoy watching these because I'm saving people 30 years of research.
Exactly.
By putting it into these media, which prevents you don't have to read. You can just stick it on your TV and, you know, cook in your kitchen and just kick back and watch it. I'm not asking a lot of people to read anymore because a lot of people haven't got the time anymore, and I understand that. And also, you know, we have a new medium, and this is a really healthy way to do it. And I've always been a big fan of Joseph Campbell, and I liked his presentations. I thought they were pretty low budget, and I thought that was good for what he did. And I thought in a simple little setting like that, this incredible man is, you know, enlightening the world, and he's done it on his own time. He's done a multi-length series. So really, it was Joseph Campbell's, you know, presentations, his various stand-up presentations, and his long talks about mythology that was kind of in the back of my mind. That's kind of the general type of style that I was trying to emulate. Because again, as you know, you'll pick up a lot of New Age and controversial DVDs that are made by people, and then they're really badly done. Another thing is that there's other people who have DVDs out there in this field that may be into New Age subject matter or into conspiratorial matter, and then you're appalled by the fact that they, you know, didn't spend enough time or energy or even resources to make something really polished and really nice. You know, so you stick it in, you go, okay, good, I'm glad I got this, but my God, you know, this is really badly done.
Yeah.
You know, it's good that the information is out there, but some of them look really pathetic, you know. So, again, a lot of time was spent to try and make this look as good as it could do with the limited, you know, funds that were there. You see, I am a believer that you can work, you know, with less resources, but it doesn't have to look like crap.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you can still do a good job if you use your brain and have a good team and just do a thing very methodically. You can, you know, so we built our own studio, you know, and we just started it from scratch. And had a really good team, and we put this all together. And again, the whole idea is that this is saving people the 30 years of research that myself I have done, or the 40 years of research that Jordan has done. You know, you can take some time, a few weeks, and we will transmit all this information to you to save you for having to do all of the research.
Exactly.
That's what this new medium is meant to be all about. That's what was in my
That's
mind.
A wonderful thing. I look so much forward to this. I mean, 2 weeks away, so...
Yeah,
definitely.
Well,
they can go to
the
Terrascopes.com.
The DVD is five DVDs long, so it's a box set. It's 15 hours just for the Atlantis.
Nice.
And 2012 is the same. That's a five-disc set, and that is about 13 to 15 hours long. Again, bringing things up to date, because in Atlantis, I had to leave things pretty much after the pole shift, and I brought it up to the 15th century, and then we moved into a little bit of the modern age. But 2012, you know, is the DVD that sort of said, okay, well, where are we really going now? What's really going to come to us in the next, you know, 10 years or the next 5 years or 7 years? That was what I dealt with in the 2012 a lot, because, again, as we talked earlier about this end date, this zero hour, the human race needs to do a fair amount of homework. As I said, you know, the remedies are pretty grassroots, but we certainly do need to get back to them. It has a lot to do with the coming of the spirit of rebellion, which I connect to the Holy Spirit. I actually think that the Holy Spirit has been misinterpreted deliberately so that we don't understand what the true Holy Spirit is in the Trinity. And I talk about that in an article that I have on the Periscope's website, which is called Shiva, the Holy Spirit and the Age of Aquarius. Because we are approaching a time in which the Holy Spirit, the real Holy Spirit, not the one sold to you by theology of Christianity, but the true Holy Spirit, that which is real, the Holy Spirit is moving, it's turning up the light. It is now going to turn up the still spiritual light in the cosmos. And that will be very, very helpful and wanted and desired by many people, but it will also be feared and deeply resented by a lot of people. So we're going to have to know about this phenomena, because we're going to be seeing it in our lives, in our very lives. We're going to see strange reactions from government. We're going to see strange reactions from the people that we know, that we're involved with, that we work with, that we have maybe known even in our families for a long, long, long time. A lot of people hide behind a mask, but this coming alignment in 2007, for instance, right now, in November of 2006, there's going to be a very powerful alignment with the planet Pluto. And Pluto is the force, or represents the energy that drags the masks down and exposes the toxicity of who people really are behind the mask.
I look forward to it. I really do. I mean, it's
That's
interesting
right.
times we live in. It's such interesting times, and it's a, you know, I'm grateful to be around in these times, because it's, you know, it's extremely interesting, if anything. And I've always been fascinated with history, and of course, to be known, I did 15 years of research into basic lies, not all of it, but majority of it lies. I was
right.
figuring. What little I did read was some American history. I was pretty much aware of true American history, thank God to Howard Zinn.
Right.
But, because I started reading him at an early age. I was about 12.
That's great.
And so I had a little bit of rebellious streak in me from that. But still, with world history, I've always been lied to until, I would say, the last maybe 5-6 years. I got presented with a Mr. Maxwell and David Icke and yourself, and I was like, mm-hmm. Well, I'm still just, amazed at the research and time and the effort all of you gentlemen have put into enlightening us to the truth. And that's what I try to bring with this show here, is, you know, a little bit of truth to people, and
right,
and let them look for themselves. And it's, you know, it's work like you've done here with this, you know, 65 hours of DVDs coming out. I mean,
yeah,
that's just amazing in itself. When we were talking in the first hour about 2012, I remember you mentioned about the photon belt and, you know, nature's way of cleansing itself. What can we do to clean our own psyches? I guess in short, what would you suggest one do to open themselves up to see who we really are?
Well, that is the key question, of course. As I said, a lot of the people that knew how to do that and to teach us that were the shamans and the druids, and they're all dead. Society has done a beautiful job from the time of the Roman conquests of murdering and slaughtering all the individuals who were the keepers of this ancient knowledge. So it is a little tricky because, you know, the people in our societies and our villages and our tribes who were the keepers of the means of cleaning the psyche, so that people did not build up a lot of toxicity, so they were not so immoral in their psyche, so that we wouldn't have these, you know, toxic leaders. This is a process. It's a process of hygiene, keeping things hygienic. Obviously, people clean everything else, but the people who have the mystery of cleansing the psyche are very few in the world today. And also remember, for each person, it's going to be slightly different, because everybody has a different kind of psyche. Everybody has a little bit different temperament. First of all, a lot of people are not projectors of immorality or negativity themselves. They are receiving it from others. So we've got different categories of people. We've got the perpetrators, the ones who literally are rotten, you know, regardless of the kind of upbringing that they've had. These are just the people who have had many incarnations, perhaps even, of doing this kind of rotten work. And just, they're just rotten, immoral, vampiristic kinds of people. We have lost the way to defend ourselves even against those people. Individuals are so craving for approval. They're so concerned about what other people are going to think of them, you know, that we allow ourselves to be wide open. It's like a beautiful mansion where the gates are wide open to every kind of filthy squatter that comes in and wants to, you know, sort of urinate in the corner, so to speak. And this is what has happened to the beautiful mansion of our world, and also to our own psyches. And in the end, because of this, we become then prisoners in our own palace, so to speak. And see, these kinds of toxic people, I'm sad to say that you could be born to them. These are not people that are up just on Capitol Hill. These could be our own parents. These could be our own children. These could be individuals that we have brought in. Now, we have domestic roles, so we don't normally see that, because we're caught in the role. We're caught in its mother, its father, its sister, its brother, and all these pathetic roles. So we're not aware of something so much more mysterious in this world, which is the exchange of energy. And that just because you might be married to somebody, or just because you might know somebody, or you have a good friend, who do you know those people really are? These are souls. Everyone is a soul. The Illuminati know how to look at us all as souls, and the higher force knows how to look at us all as just souls. We get caught in the give-and-take role situation because we want something from everybody else. We often only give because we have to have something back. So we conform to these roles because these roles is our security. These roles are our protection. Now, how does this connect with the question you asked? Well, as we count down to 2012, one of the biggest areas that's going to change is not the political sphere. That'll change somewhat. But the biggest changes that Pluto brings is changes to our most personal, intimate relationships. The age of Aquarius. Anybody who knows and has studied a little bit about the difference between the age of Pisces and the age of Aquarius knows again that the emphasis is also on relationships, and that it's in the age of Pisces in which we've had the dysfunctional, needy, dependency-based relationships. Well, listen, that is the relationship that you have with your kings and your autocrats and your leaders. But it's not just with them, it's also with the most intimate parties in which you have. So the tyranny is, you know, it's just a matter of scale. You can't say, oh, these horrible leaders, we have brought them into existence. Our need, our dependency, our identification with their power, all of these things are born out of psychic dynamics. So Pluto is going to make those psychic dynamics available to us so that we see who we are, that we've become trapped in our own webs. And one of the other factors that it's going to do, one of these other things that might be very unpleasant to people, is that it's going to start exposing who we are and what our dependencies are. Is our love based on need? Is the relationship based on, hey, honey, I'm empty, I need you, you're empty, you need me? And then that's what we're waving in front of the God force and think we're going to get away with it? That's the kind of rubbish that we're in, and we think that nature is going to, you know, continue to accept that type of filth and degenerate just because it's lasted for so long? This is the toxicity that I'm talking about. The hypocrisy of nature. The hypocrisy of human nature. Now, Carl Jung, Blaise Pascal, many of these individuals have said this. Marcel Proust, they've all said, wake up, humanity. You're not going to be allowed to continue with that kind of hypocrisy, because the dirt will mount up, and then from that festering dirt, be it moral or spiritual or psychic or social, what do you do when you find sewage? You find maggots. You find lowlifes. You find parasites. So my message is, listen, if your self or your spirit has been murdered, and the ego, which is like a ghost that has risen from the grave of the truth, from the grave of the self, and I find that your spirit is basically a corpse, then what would I want to expect to find on that corpse? Is parasites, right? And maggots and all sorts of vile stuff. So man's spirit is dead. He's murdered all the saints. He's murdered all the pagans. He's murdered all the witches. He's murdered all the Cathars and the Gnostics, so that we can have these exploitatory, monolithic, completely satanic, in my opinion, religions. A person who merely does herbalism is considered a crank, like you were yourself implying, you know, a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
So with all this, you know, carnage, man is suppressing his own vital instincts, repressing his own instincts, repressing his own vital nature, teaching kids from the time of school onwards not to think, but what to think, and don't be unique.
Oh, that's so true.
Yeah, and you have no intelligence of yourself. I was just watching a commercial the other day, which is meant to, ostensibly, it's meant to prevent children from, you know, smoking drugs or whatever. But this, it's actually, it was doublespeak, because the commercial was actually telling the child that they were showing, who was, of course, in this choice about whether or not to accept, you know, marijuana from their friends, was like this completely stum child. And the message of this commercial was, if mommy and daddy hasn't bothered teaching the child, telling her what to do, how will she know what to say? So, yes, that appears to be a good commercial, but the secret message is your children are stupid, and unless you get in there with a big stick and tell them what to do, they have no natural intelligence. So the commercial's obvious message is a positive one, meaning, hey, parents, get involved, you know, and instruct your children, blah, blah, blah. And most people will go, oh, how wonderful, I'm so glad the commercials are showing like that. But I said, ha-ha, wait a minute, what's being subliminally implied here by the imagery? That this child is a complete dork, is out in the world, all threatened, aching for approval from these idiot friends, and couldn't make up her own mind because mommy and daddy haven't bothered sitting down with her. What rubbish! Children have their natural intelligence. Children who are given the trust from a parent to say, I know that you will be able to cope outside in the world, and I don't have to instruct you in everything, because I know you have what's called natural intelligence, and you'll make your own decisions. See, if you give your trust to a child like that, nothing else needs to be done. It will grow up straight and tall and strong and proud, and that's it. But what we do is we take away that faith in the child, we don't project trust onto the child, and then say, we're going to tell you A, B, C, D, like some boot camp. Then you'll know how to live in life.
Well, that's the way... I think that's the way America wants their children anymore, is boot camp militarized, though, I mean.
Hey, look at the commercials for all this weight gear. I come to America, I look at everything. I see non-stop infomercials, commercials on body equipment, various kinds of weight gear, various kinds of fitness programs, exercise. And I'm not against that. I think exercise is necessary.
Well, America's so wasteful. It's all garbage, though. And you're right. There's, you know, 40 different new exercise machines out every month.
Every month. Now, here's another thing to observe, though. When you see these commercials, step back for a moment and don't just, because, I mean, we laugh at it and we go, it's utter nonsense, and of course it is. But there's another even darker aspect to these things, and I believe it's one of the reasons why they're so proliferating as these shows, is look at the mechanical movements. Step back for a moment, think of Wilhelm Reich, and then think, look at what they're showing the human body needs to do in order to be fit. They're not saying put on the Doors in the end, the song, right?
Yeah.
Or they're not saying put on a beautiful Indian raga. Or they're not saying put on something like the Dead Can Dance, or say Tangerine Dream, you see, or Kitaro, and just do these Tai Chi type, just make up your own dance, just do some, you know, beautiful movements that make your body feel good. No, 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 no. These 40 infomercials you're talking about that come on is perpetually body. They're selling you an idea of what it means to be fit and adjusted in this world. These commercials are extremely negative. I believe they may even be funded from upstairs, because there's a reason why they're on there, because it's this mechanicalistic, armored, highly masculinized form, this mechanical form. And the very movements that you see these models doing is extremely negative, and therefore it breeds to children, it breeds to people who have weight problems, or it breeds to even people who want to genuinely improve their health. But it's telling them something subliminally. It's saying, yeah, you can improve your health, but of course, you do it through this mechanical, ritualistic, orgiastic type of movement, which are completely unnatural to the body.
That's an incredible analogy. I just, wow, that's...
Right, think about it. Even the way the machines are made, they look
hideous.
That's
great.
You know, you want to get fit? Follow Marlon Brando. That guy put on a lot of weight, he'd lose it. He put on a lot of weight, he'd lose it. One day he was asked, hey man, how do you lose your weight when you want? He goes, I just get up and dance.
Yeah, there
he
you
goes,
go.
I've learned some stuff from the Hawaiian, because he lived in Hawaii, Tahiti. He goes, I've learned some stuff from these hula hoopers. These hula dancers. I just go and do that. I just do it. I just put on some, you know, ambient music, some trance music, you know, and I develop my own dance. I just move my own body. I do part aerobics, part dance, part stretching, part all of that. And that is going to totally empower you. You know, I was thinking of even advertising this and saying, hey, break through all of this crap that they're showing you about fitness and just develop your own thing. You know, I mean, it needs to be done, because the whole thing is so mechanicalistic.
The funny thing is, you could probably actually sell that in America. Tell people to do their own thing and charge them $995 or $995, and they would buy it.
If anybody's listening wants to go and do it, go ahead. Just, you know, get onto this right now. You know, you can email me and we can stay in contact, and somebody should put this together and make a lot of money, because that will change the world. That will literally, people have got to get out of this, put a battery in it, go down to, you know, Macy's, buy it, bring it back and install it kind of mentality, and then, you know, you install it in your brain and it's going to do this for you. And this hideous mechanicalness of life, everything in squares, everything in blocks. You know, in the DVD that I do called The Subversive Symbolism, Subversive Use of Sacred Symbolism in the Media, that's coming out in a couple of weeks as well. In that particular DVD program, I talk about this penchant that we have in society, the civic engineers, the people who've designed our cities and our cars and our schools and our hospitals and all around the churches, everybody sitting in cubes. Everything sitting in cubicles, the way buildings are designed, the way skyscrapers are designed, the way fast food franchises are designed. We go into all of this and show what is the difference between a circle and a square, and how the square symbolism is used on you to conform, to help you conform, to make you conform. How light is used upon you. How commercials subliminally imply things to you so that your whole organic centers of intelligence, you know, when you jump into a swimming pool and try to get fit that way, do you go like a mechanical maniac, some sergeant major? If anybody did that, you'd only be comic relief for everybody watching. They'd think you were crazy if you tried to do some, you know, like a boot camp maneuvers in the swimming pool.
Yeah.
But on dry land, they're doing it like some sort of, you know, thing made out of plastic. Most people, and they think they're getting great health. They're building their muscles. What utter nonsense. I mean, is this the way the African tribesmen who can run for 3-4 days without stopping?
Yeah,
is this the
exactly.
way that the Tibetan women who will walk for 800 miles from the hills of northern Tibet down to Dharamsala in India during a great festival, a Buddhist festival, women will walk in bare feet with their babies on their back for 800 miles without stopping? This is fact. This happens in the world. I've seen it with my own two eyes. In Africa, they'll tell you that certain men can run for a week without pausing. Don't believe me?
Well, about like the tribes that eat through the sun.
That's right.
You know, I mean, I find that just absolutely incredible. Apparently NASA had borrowed one of them for this gentleman from India that hasn't eaten substance other than water, light amounts of water, and I think like a glass of milk a week, something
right.
like that. And but he eats from the sun.
That's right, because that's another big lie. We have another lie going on about that you need minerals and vitamins from external foods. This is not true. I work with a guy who passed away, Brian Jenner. Is a very, very brilliant healer. And Brian Jenner had proven that the body is an alchemical alembic, that you eat for reasons, but do not imagine in your mind this other mind control lie that you're getting your minerals and your vitamins from the food. You're not. Your body is a genetic masterpiece. It's an alembic that knows how to create from even just a glass of water all that is needed if you're mentally aware of it. So just from sunlight, like you're saying, from breath, if a person is completely in tune with this and understands its principles, they can, through their light body, generate all the vitamins and minerals that are needed. It is a complete and utter, worldwide, imagine the food gives you the vitamins and minerals. It's a misthink, and it's been conditioned to us. Well, of course, the government and the people in power want us to believe that. They want us to believe that if you're depressed or you're schizoid or you're manic depressive or whatever, then you go and take a pharmaceutical pill and everything will be perfectly fine. If you have a disease, you rub some ointment on you and everything will be fine. The whole idea being that everything that constitutes a disease or a virus is coming from the outside world. They never want to tell you, no, it's coming from within you. It's your thinking that is bringing this disease condition about.
Your thinking or your diet or, you know,
right, but even your diet is still based on your thinking process because
exactly.
You're only attracted to eating the wrong foods if your thinking is off in some way or your emotional body is down or your immune system is down. But the greatest scientists in the world, like the Bruce Liptons of the world, know that your immunity, your immune system, and your DNA, and all of it, your organs and your glands, are primarily affected by thought, by thinking, by temperament, by mood, and all of these kinds of things. Then when you're in the wrong mood, and your immune system's, you know, completely bucketed out, it's only working at, say, 10 or 15% of power, well, then, of course, you're going to be running to the soul food and to the fizzy drinks and to the cigarettes, you see, and the alcohol, because now your body is dependent on getting it from an outside source. But if we were living in a pure shamanic tradition with people who knew how to educate us into the right methods of healing, just like I was telling you about these exercise machines, we would have our immune systems working about 95%. We would be so sustainable that we would just be able to eat a couple of mangoes, drink some pure alkaline water, and pretty much that would be the end of it. You wouldn't even have to eat more than a couple of slices of lettuce, for God's sake. Because the idea is that you're getting your drishti, you're getting your life force, your libido, your prana, from the subtle energies that the plants contain. But my God, if a piece of lettuce contains vitamin and minerals, doesn't the human body also contain it?
Exactly.
I mean, what is the lunacy here that you have to eat a steak? You can tell me that a piece of dead gammon steak and not the human body contains the vitamins and the minerals, and you expect me to believe this. And everybody is mind-controlled into believing that. My God, you can tell me that a grain of rice has vitamins and minerals in it because somebody in a white coat told you that. But your body, which is not even plugged into a wall, which has created its own size, which grows every year, which discards millions of cells, whose eyes beat and heart pumps without you even having to ask it, the blood increased as you grew, this incredible miracle, all of the miracles of it, and your body doesn't have its own vitamins and minerals in it. My goodness, what a pack of lies we have been told. There's so much that we need to understand. The Paracelsus, Pythagoras, you see, in the East and Tibet, they taught this to the Buddhists and to the yogis who know all about this. And the Western world has been kept in a complete dumbed-down state. And there's many, many levels to this. I mean, we're talking now about the healing arts, but my God, on society, you know, the way cities are designed, the way children are born, a baby has just been born, is pulled from the dark recesses of its mother's womb into an incredibly fluorescently lit place with a bunch of sadistic people dressed in white who are going to now slap it on its ass as soon as it's born, and the message to the child is, you're being slapped because you've done something wrong by being born.
You're being delivered.
You're being delivered. And the slap is punitive. The slap is to say, as if the child has done something wrong by being born. That's the subliminal message that the child gets from youth. So the youth is walking around saying, what's wrong? I'm not being welcomed into the world. I was slapped into the world. Therefore, I get the idea that my act of birth was a wrong thing.
Wow.
And then you're hung upside down.
That's
right? This is all connected to the tarot cards and the hangman. And a lot of symbolism.
Oh, man, you're so right on it. I never even thought of it that way. That's, oh, wow.
Think of it. And you know what it does? When they hang you upside down like that, it screws up your melatonin. It's done for reasons.
I'm just getting mind blown right here. It's just,
it's amazing, isn't it?
It makes so much sense, too. Yeah, that's
no
just...
wonder the kids are crying. Your melatonin and your serotonin, which is in the pineal gland, I think it's the pituitary, I can't remember it right now, but I think it's the one between your eyes anyway, which I think is the pituitary, which secretes the melatonin. Melatonin has been scientifically understood to be the hormone that rules the person's sense of independence and rebellion. Now let me repeat that. Melatonin and serotonin are known scientifically to represent the human drive for independence and rebellion. And serotonin, melatonin, is sensitive to light. Melatonin, and especially melatonin, is light sensitive. That is the reason, my friend, why you are put under 18 years under the fluorescent lights in a school, blazing white hospital. That is the reason why you're hung upside down. That is the reason why police will use the light on you in the old interrogative ways that they used to do. And even now, when they pull you over in the car, the guy's got the headlights on. Hey, but that's not good enough. He's got to put the whole damn spotlight in your face. And then when he comes with his flashlight, he's got to put that in your face. Now, why would they want to do that?
That's man.
And I'll tell you why. It's because from
that
the time
makes
of birth,
total sense.
Our melatonin reading, each person's melatonin river, it's a river. Hormones are like a river of life. I think there's 13 hormones in the body or something like that. I may be wrong. But if anybody is aware of this, please, you know, email me and tell me this, because I know that the hormones are the most interesting thing. They're highly spiritual. And these are like rivers of life. Now, when you're born, your melatonin river is out. It's like a tide that's gone out. It's so assaulted that it freezes, and your melatonin is not flowing properly. Far from it. You may only be working at, say, 15%. So this makes you susceptible to all kinds of control. Now, those people who are the rebels in the world, people like yourself, people who go against the grain, people who cannot take rules from anyone, people who can't work for others, they like being their own boss, it's possible that their parents brought them up in a different, or some variable or some factor happened in which their melatonin wasn't as malice affected. And therefore, they grew up with a higher sense of independence. But the most of the world who go through the traditional ways of circumcision and all of this stuff and who work in these gigantic buildings.
I was just going to mention circumcision too. I was just going to mention that because circumcision, I mean, that's just got to be so traumatic on a child. It's, that's amazing analogy though. I mean, with the light that I've never even came close to thinking of anything on those means until now. So.
Right. Well, now, from now that you know this, now observe why it is that the lights are left on in the cities all over the world.
I am
especially
just
in America,
awestruck.
You know, people have left work at 5 o'clock. By 7 o'clock, even the cleaning is done. Then you tell me why it is that from 9 o'clock till the following morning, the lights are on in all the tower blocks. I'll tell you why. It has to do with subliminal control of the human race. The very fact that the buildings are even skyscrapers in which the car goes underneath and underneath the car park, and you come out and underneath the car park and you ascend up in an elevator to your office is all based on the phallic symbolism of ancient times and the obelisk of being inside a building that has glass on the outside with the idea that you can't see in, but we can see out. Well, that's a suit of armor. That these are the new suits of armor that we go and work inside every day. That, you know, this whole idea of the private space, that we can see you, but you can't see us. And we go inside in the same way that the sperm goes into the, you know, under the testicles and then rises up through the elevator to the place of work, to the office in the firm, the F-I-R-M, the firm, which comes from the word herm or Hermes or hermetic, all which have phallic masculine connotations because everybody wants to be part of the big penis. Everybody wants to feel that they're the great knight in shining armor. There's been a subliminal thing done on us even in the designs of cities. Then the lights are left on. Then we are sitting under the fluorescent lights in the school. There's no ambient lighting because they don't want shadows in your life. They don't want you to have rest. Now, knowing this, turn on the television and watch the commercials, how much light they're throwing at you every 5 seconds. Look how much light is used in commercials and look at the way that light is done. I taught this subject for 2 years in Berkeley, California to a group of kids at the New Age Academy. This is a private school for children where the teachers are trying to teach them this kind of stuff, and they hired me as a communications teacher. So I would bring them videos and videos and videos. I've got hours and hours and hours and hours of commercials, and we would look at them in a totally different way. Excuse me, I don't want you to turn your TV off. I want you to turn it on. I don't want you to be a cynic of your society. I want you to be a critic of it. Now I want you to study what it is that they're doing on you and empower yourself so then you have the right filters to keep the rubbish out. Turning the TV off isn't going to help. Find out how the power is being used on you. And you know something? You've never seen kids change so fast to become incredible, shining examples of human beings because somebody told them, hey, you're not broken. It's the world that's broken. Let me show you how. In fact, I know you know it's broken. You tell me how it's done. Well, kids are only too happy to tell you what's wrong with the world if you're willing to listen.
Exactly.
And that's what we did.
Kids are the most honest of beings, that's for sure.
Aren't they? And they are fully aware of what's wrong. It's just nobody's bothered asking them.
Yeah, well, you know, definitely pay attention to
you know
why
I was telling these kids? It's like, hey, do you know that you are not broken, but it's your parents and the system that is broken? It was almost like somebody had taken a weight off all of these kids' shoulders that very moment. Just in telling them that, it was almost like some entity had just departed from the building, like an exorcism had taken place. Because nobody has even told most of the children of the earth that simple fact. And then we wonder why they're delinquent, murderous, criminal, sitting in their rooms depressed. I'll tell you why. It's very simple. They're in a world of lies.
Yeah, they're in a world of control.
They're a world of control and lies, that's right.
I have a few questions from some listeners, if you wouldn't mind answering a
few
of them.
Go ahead, absolutely.
One of them was from a host. He brought it up to me on a show here about 3 or 4 weeks ago. We were talking about having you on, possibly. Just trying to figure out a time that was convenient for you. But anyway, he brought up something really interesting. I've been in Europe quite a few times, but I had never made it to Ireland. So Belfast was of the city of interest that we had, but Denver International Airport, I've been there quite a few times.
Oh, my God, yeah.
It's quite a spook house. Well, he was saying there was something about Belfast that was very similar on those means as far as a lot of esoteric and...
Oh, God almighty, the whole city is full of it.
Oh, really?
The whole city
is... Well, that's most major European cities, though. It was like Amsterdam, the Dam Square even. It was like, wow. They were building some big... Illuminati structure in Dam Square in 99, the last time I was there.
Well, sure. I can't remember where it is now. I imagine it might be Brussels, but it could have been The Hague, where they moved the EU headquarters to Brussels, but its previous place, they had a 30-foot Black Widow spider.
Nice.
In the courtyard, for God's sake.
Nice.
Yeah, I got the pictures of it. It's well known. You can get on the internet.
That's
and go and
wonderful.
Check it out.
Cool.
All these cities. That's partly one of the reasons why I even got into all of this subject matter myself when I was young, is I was looking at all of this Masonic symbolism. And of course, Ireland is controlled by the Vatican, 100%, even though the Protestant North don't really know that. They'd hate to hear that, but nevertheless, that happens to be a fact. And then also the Masonic order is very, very, very powerful in Northern Ireland. And, yeah, the city of Belfast, I've been meticulously studied that. If people are very interested in that subject, they need to go onto my website, and they need to go to the links page, and then they need to click through from the links page to another page, which is called the Affiliates Product page. And on that page, it features the books and CDs and DVDs of people that I work very closely with and whose works I recommend. So
cool.
Go to taroscopes.com, then go to the links page, and then click through to the Affiliates page, and the first book that you're going to see there is called Ireland, Land of the Pharaohs. And it's by a gentleman that is an Irishman who lives in Ireland still. He's a good friend of mine, Andrew Power. And that book has to be got by anyone who's interested in this subject of how the astromantic, zodiological, Masonic symbolism is encoded into not only the streets and not only into the layout of cities, but how even the royalty operate based on these celestial movements, meaning the openings of this, the closings of that, the inauguration of this, you see, some kind of celebration or feast day or some kind of birthday celebration, how the royals and the presidents and the elites all use these particular sidereal times. I go a lot into this also in the DVD I've done called Astrotheology. But in the meantime, get Andrew Power's book because it goes into this. For instance, I'll give you one anecdote from the book. In 1690, there was an enormous battle of great importance for Irish and world history, and it happened in Ireland, in Southern Ireland, at a place called the Boyne, the River Boyne. Anyone who's interested in Irish mythology or is from Ireland will know exactly what I'm talking about now, in which two kings, that was Stuart, the Stuart King James, and the House of Orange, the Hanover House King William, who later became the King of England, they fought a battle in Southern Ireland on the banks of a river, the river called the River Boyne. Now, Andrew Power discovered that the famous moment in which the King William and his horse, his white horse, entered into the river. This is like moving his horse into the river to lead his troops. At that very moment, the sun passed over the Milky Way. Now, it turns out that this river Boyne is a physical, exact replica of the Milky Way. This is something like Graham Hancock has discovered also in Agora in Thailand. Indonesia, and also he found in the position of the pyramids in Egypt, where the three pyramids are meant to be based on the constellation of Orion, okay? So this was done all over the world, this kind of thing, not just in Ireland. But it so turns out that this royal family were so aware of celestial movements that his astrologers and his magi had even instructed him that his movements, like moving his horse across the famous River Boyne, would happen as the sun was simultaneously moving across the zodiac, moving across the river up there, which is the Milky Way. And the whole of the Battle of the Boyne was orchestrated based on these what are called stellar or astromantic movements. And this man has done a lifelong research to show just how these guys are empowered.
Wow.
Now, when you're talking about buildings, all the buildings, the state buildings in England, the very famous ones, anybody's gone to London, I'm sure, they've all visited these wonderful buildings at Whitehall and so on, and in the centers of government down in Westminster, right? And, of course, every city in the world has your civic buildings. Well, those buildings are purposely and deliberately placed on very powerful earth vortexes. These earth vortexes protect those people who are working in those buildings, whereas they put our houses on very negative areas, so that we're always in, it's like something on a bloody poltergeist, like that movie from Spielberg. It's not far wrong, that film, in fact, although that movie's a little bit, you know, blasé. However, the main principle is also correct. From a geomantic point of view, 99% of the ordinary slaves, and that means us, we live in what is known as geopathic places, by design.
Oh yeah, I read this book. It was on the architecture of Washington, D.C., the Masonic architecture of Washington,
David Overton, that's another book I was going to recommend.
Yeah. That's a crazy
book. That book is called The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. People need to get that from an American context. And then also Graham Hancock came out with another one that does the same thing, and that book is called Talisman. So these are the three books that I would recommend for people to get, and you'll have a full working knowledge of this, which is Andrew Powers' Ireland, Land of the Pharaohs, which is on my website. Talisman by Graham Hancock. Get that book. It talks about the building of the Pentagon. The U.S. Pentagon was built on September 11th.
Wow. Oh, my. Wow.
Right? Oh, yeah. You're going to find out something. The Masonic Lodges, Roosevelt inauguration, a lot of the stuff that surrounded Roosevelt had to do with the date September 11th.
Oh, I look forward to that book.
Yeah,
that's,
it's a very good book. I talk about it in my DVD, so if people want to wait for the Astrotheology DVD, I will be mentioning that book and showing people the key chapters. Then the other third book is The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, David Overton. These can all be bought.
Yeah, that's the one I have. That's a very interesting book.
So. Yeah, it's available in paperback now. These are the kind of subjects that people need to get into, because you're walking around in these streets.
Yeah,
you're part of a giant ritual. Paris, Philadelphia, Cologne, London, Ireland, Edinburgh, all the American cities of importance. We are literally participating just like a electronic circuit, just like like electricity passing through an electronic circuit. We are the human electricity keeping this incredible matrix alive.
Yeah, definitely. Well, another question we had, two more questions, and we'll be done with the questions here. Concerning Madam Helena Petrona Blavatsky, mm-hmm. There's information linking her to a man by the name of Lord Edward Bueller Lytton. This man was a member, apparently, of the Committee of 300, Grandmaster of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, head of British Intelligence, and author of the books The Last Days of Pompeii and The Coming Race.
Right.
Now, it's been strongly suggested that Madame Blavatsky was one of his operatives in British intelligence, and Lord Lytton is referred to several times in her book, Isis Unveiled. Now, could you please explain this connection and tell us how and why the works of Madame Blavatsky can be trusted?
Well, Madame Blavatsky can be trusted, and one has to be very careful about associating her with any kind of negative or satanic orders. This woman was one of the most powerful spiritual adepts that the world has ever known. She was a truth seeker. The gentleman who wrote that question to you is probably not familiar with her book. She wrote books that you can get anywhere, which is Isis Unveiled and The Secret Doctrine. But you can only get Secret Doctrine Volume 1 and Volume 2. It's much harder to get Volume 3. All I can say in short is, if you can get your hands on Madame Blavatsky's Secret Doctrine, Volume 3, your queries about her spiritual, you know, level will be silenced. That book has been suppressed because in it, she warns against these adepts, these Masonic adepts. She warns against the Illuminati. She warns against the Vatican. And she warns against these people. And she's very much, I'm indebted to her work, because my work also talks about that these people do not just come from the, you know, the 1800s, 1900s. They're many thousands of years old. They go back to ancient Atlantis. Well, this is what she talks about. Now, she created an order, a theosophical order. That means that many people are going to belong to that kind of order. She knew princes. She knew dukes. She knew all sorts of royalty from all over the world. This is an extended theosophical research institute that had, you know, hundreds and hundreds of members. And of course, some of them had political affiliations that she did not share. But that doesn't mean that then she's culpable, right?
Yeah, very much so. I totally agree.
And in fact, she wasn't silent about it. So Bulwer Lytton will quote from her, and she'll quote from him, because they're all academics, they're all intellectuals, all using each other's work and discovering. And see, Bulwer Lytton was a renowned scholar, and all of these people were not just some three-headed devils walking around. Some of them were incredible men.
Yeah,
I mean, Albert Pike is one of the most negative people you can imagine from a concept point of view, connecting to Freemasonry and see what you would call the subversion of America.
Well, his writings alone are just...
But his writings, as you say, are amazing.
Yeah.
And deeply spiritual. So these are ambivalent characters, and we need to understand one thing that I think is very missing in America, and that is context.
Yeah.
People need to remember context. Don't paint with a tar brush everybody just because, you put them into a category of being satanic. These people were spiritual. What they believed in, they thought was spiritual. And they believed that they were doing right for the human race. So Bulwer Lytton has his idea of who he belongs to and what his affiliations are. And say somebody like Albert Pike, they're not walking around thinking they're doing evil. They're walking around thinking that they're saving mankind from himself and that they need to have, you know, a one-world system, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Madame Blavatsky had a completely different understanding of that. She didn't want anything to do with any of that. But, you know, these individuals are affiliates. And we want to be at the same table as them. We don't want them to be some creepy, hidden, mysterious, you know, group.
Oh, exactly. I mean, yeah, like your round table, like we talked about in the first hour, you know, and that's the way it should be. I mean, you should have your negative people there so you know what's going on and
I'd like to see people's bullet holes on the outside. I don't want to be behind the mask because that's when it's dangerous.
Yeah.
You don't know who somebody is. They put a smile on and they have a nice... I prefer, you know, to see people's bullet holes, so to speak, because then I know, okay, what you've been through. I know who you are. You're wearing it on your sleeve. Those are the people I can trust. Now, Bulwer Lytton and these people were affiliates of the Luminous Lodge, and they were members of the Vril Society, and which is connected to the rise of the Nazis, and is connected to some hideous, you know, operations in the world, because these are the individuals who made a certain choice in their life. Now, Madame Blavatsky, I can tell you, did not make that choice, and her order was taken over later on by Annie Besant, who was a member of the Fabian Society, and who was openly affiliated with these secret societies. Madame Blavatsky was not. She would have turned in her grave to find out what became of her organization. When Madame Blavatsky was alive, she did everything she could to prevent the Theosophical Society becoming a wing of the political Fabian societies, okay? She did not want politics and spirituality to mix, period. She was a scholar, an antiquarian. She made no comments about one world order or any of this nonsense. She despised Orthodox religion. She despised politics. And she did not want her organization to be done that way. But these people who have the money bags are very, very powerful. And they seeded her organization with these individuals who pretended to be friends of hers and pretended to promote her work so that they knew that it was only a matter of time before we get rid of her. And then we have this beautiful working cover, just like Freemasonry, which was once a very profound organization, was infiltrated by the Illuminati in the 1780s. In the same way, Theosophy was infiltrated. So if people go onto my website and look at the free web stream, The Origins of Evil, we deal with that in the first segment. I think it's the first and second segment. So if people click on the first and second hours of, not hours, but it's like they're in 20-minute segments, just click on to the first and second segments of The Origins of Evil web stream. It's free. I go into that as well about Madame Blavatsky. And I tell you in that the people who took over her organization, like the Baileys, Alice Bailey and her husband, and the other individuals, Annie Besant, these are the people who took the money from the political system. These are the individuals who contorted the Theosophical Society and made it into a wing of these secret societies. And that is the reason why the Lucius Publishing Company, that used to be Madame Blavatsky's publishing company, is the publishing company of the United Nations today. Only it used to be called the Lucifer Trust.
Very interesting. Well, right. I think that's a great reply on that. And we have one more question here for you, Michael. This listener asked, could you please explain the fundamental difference between the conclusions you have arrived at versus the works of people such as David Icke, who, like yourself, have a great deal of evidence to present concerning the reptilians, the destruction of Tiamat, the fabric of reality as it pertains to the human psyche, and the origins of the human race. I find it fascinating that members of the research community have an incredible similarities in their work, while at the same time have fundamental differences in their conclusions, especially when it comes to the ancient accounts of human history.
Yeah, that's probably the best question I've ever heard. That's a question that's always on my mind, because I, as a researcher, have always been very aware of it. And it's good. I'm very happy that other people have paid notice to that. I think it's very important for people to notice not only the similarities but the differences, because it is in those differences that the truth will be found. It's the weighing up process. Of course, I believe in my work, and I respect a lot of other people's work. I'm very much indebted to people I used to actually contribute to David Icke. So I actually, I think I contributed to his biggest secret. So there's information of mine that contributed to both The Biggest Secret and Children of the Matrix. I know David well. We talk a lot. We have many points of similarity, but also lots of differences. You know, I think that I'm very close to the work of William Bramley. I find his work, I can actually say that without Gods of Eden, without that book, probably my work would not even exist in that field. It might exist, but I doubt it, and it would be in a very different form. So the two books, I'm indebted to William Bramley's Gods of Eden and to another book by Jack Barringer called Past Shock. This is a book that helped me a lot. So, but specifically speaking about the differences, is you see, to be quite blunt about it, is that I come from a metaphysical background from day one. Okay? My family goes back in a long line of people who did this kind of work, who were philosophers, who were aesthetics, who were deeply imbued in the metaphysical tradition. I am not from the computer world. I'm not from the journalism world. I'm not from sports. I'm not from art. You see, I don't come from any other milieu but this world, this work. And what that does is give you pedigree. And it gives you a certain sense of what is right and what is wrong. It doesn't make you infallible. Nobody's infallible. But what it does do is it kind of makes you a little bit more studious, a little bit more perceptive. David and people like that are well-meaning, brilliant individuals, excellent researchers, but you see, they come from the world as is. They come from the world of the lie. Now, granted, they've stepped out of the lie in recent times and are now researching and looking. And see, David Icke, of course, his work is a compilation of a lot of other people's work. Very little of it is his own thinking. He will admit this, and if you look at the backs of his book, you'll find that he is constantly referring. He's got researchers all over the world who feed him with information.
Yeah.
So you have to look at that as well. Whereas Eustace Mullins, you see, or somebody else, for instance, or then we have all of the people in the Christian right who are doing some fantastic work in this field of exposing the conspiracy, certainly a lot better than the Christian left, I can tell you that. but you know, perhaps my difference there would be, you know, their whole thing with Jesus and that they're selling Christianity. But see, I'm able to put that aside. I love the work of Gardner, who wrote Unholy Alliance. I love the work of Ralph Epperson, you see, who wrote The Unseen Hand, and Tex Mars, and James Bogreitz. Just because they're coming from a Christian point of view doesn't mean that I'm their enemy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we are all part of the same body. We're all fighting the same enemy. And if you're using your spiritual platform, your religious platform, to educate the people into thinking about some of this stuff, then by all means do it. And some people have done some fantastic work. There's some fantastic work out there. I refer to it a lot. I like the work of even Steve Quayle. You know, I'm not of the same religious persuasion as that man, but he's done some fantastic works showing you about the post-human world and the fact of the genetics and what these people are up to in changing the DNA of the human being. You see, so we have differences. Now, my thing is that I'm coming from a tradition of them. I haven't come from any other part or any other discipline, any other academic source. So I kind of have it in my blood. And that is why I think that my work resonates a lot more with people. When it comes to things like the reptilians, there's a lot of disinformation about that. I think that David, you know, picked up on some, it's a fascinating subject, and I think he went at it like the typical journalist, you know, full-fledged. He went for that story. He knew it was a good one, a shocker. But, you know, again, Zachariah Sitchin, David Icke, some of these people, what they do is they do not necessarily cross-reference a lot of their findings with other scholars or with other mythologies in the world. The reason why my work is so strong is that I not only base it on the most purest archive that exists, which is the ancient legends and mythologies of the world, by the way, but I also cross-reference it. I've looked into the work of Velikovsky. I've really gone and studied personally the ancient scripts. I haven't had somebody tell me, hey, there's a line in the Bhagavad Gita that says this, or hey, man, there's a line in the Norse Edda that says that. You know, I've been like breastfed on a lot of stuff. I've actually read most of these ancient scriptures themselves. spent, you know, a lifetime doing it. And therefore, it's just like anything that you do good. If you play tennis a lot, you'll get to be pretty good at tennis. You know, if you work in computers really good, you just get very skillful at something. So it's just a matter of who is the chef that's cooking the meal, you know? People like the flavor of my meal. It's because I've been working on it that long.
Exactly. Well, I sure enjoy the flavor of your meals, that's for sure.
But remember, I could not have done my work without these other individuals. You see, we're all sitting at the same table. Without Jordan Maxwell, there would not be a Michael Tesorian, and that is a fact. Because I was as lost as everybody else. I had some parts that I put together, and they looked kind of cool, and I thought, hey, great, I got a understanding there. This is consensus. I can see this, you know, my whole life has been a philosophical investigation of what the hell this thing we call life is. But I couldn't help noticing that so many other of these vital parts of this jigsaw no matter what I did, I couldn't put them into the right order. I knew that there was an occult connection, for instance, in the media, because from the time of 13, I've been studying the fact that there's subliminal stuff in magazines. You know, my family used to go mad having to collect all these magazines and wondering why I'm using a magnifying glass on magazines. What the hell are you doing? But see, I was looking at this stuff and go, why are these skulls and ice cubes and demonic symbols here? You know, I was looking at all of this, educating myself. But see, I, like a lot of people, said, but why would they be here? What's the reason for all of this? I had questions too. Then I come to America, I get in touch with Jordan, I see some of his videos, and immediately the light goes on. And it's like your whole DNA has just gone through a phase shift. And I'm sweating, because I don't take this stuff lightly. This is not just something to do for entertainment in the day, you see. See, I'm burning with this. I'm thinking, my God, I gotta talk to this man. I gotta let this man know I'm doing very similar work. So I immediately find his number, I try to phone people, find out his number. So I call Jordan Maxwell up, and he picks up the phone. You know, I'll never forget that day. And we had this great conversation. And I said, you know, my God, you're talking about the same books, the same stuff that I've read. I can't believe it, what you're doing. So he immediately became my teacher, my mentor, to show me what I was missing.
Well, his information is amazing, that's for sure. His
damn right.
History.
He's building statues to the guy all over the country.
Well, it's just his knowledge of language is, you know, and the meaning of the words. You know, it just blows me away every time. It's just like you were talking earlier with the light. I'm still going like, wow. Learn something new every day, but not quite like that.
Well, where do you think I learned all this stuff?
Exactly.
This is being from the great teachers. I've learned a lot from Eustace Mullins, is one of my all-time favorite people. Without the work of Eustace Mullins, we'd be groping in the dark. Without the work of Ezra Pound, the great American poet, you see, the list goes on. The list goes on of the great geniuses that have already stood up. And said, enough is enough. We have questions here. We're going to expose this system. You know, I'm good friends with Anthony J. Hilder. I've been interviewed in several of his talks. Another person who saved me having to do all the research he's been doing for years by watching his DVDs and watching his books, you see, reading his books. I am suddenly getting educated into what is going on. And then David's books start coming out. That's great to have a fellow Englishman, a fellow, you know, person from Britain taking the flack. And saying, listen, I'm going to think for myself. So these little discrepancies that you find in all sorts of people's different works, yeah, they're going to be there. There's nothing you can do. We're not all just dressed in the one uniform. You know, we're not all just marching in lockstep. There is differences. So take a little piece of this, take a little piece of that. I think that James Bull Greitz, his message, has been absolutely key for me in putting things together, you see, from an American context.
Yeah.
And Jim Mars, you know, and I'm a good friend with... person I respect incredibly is Dr. Stan Monteith. You know, he's a reverend. He has a Christian channel. I've been on his program several times. I'm not a Christian, but he and me have nothing against one another.
Yeah.
If he knows I'm even into the occult. But what the difference between what Dr. Monteith understands is, okay, Michael Tesorian might be, you know, into the occult. The reason is because our dark masters are using the occult on us, so we need people like Michael to be studying the occult to find out what it is.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, people that don't dwell in the occult, it's like I worked at, you know, with herbs for quite a while and essential oils. And of course, the guy we were getting our oils from, makes the OTO oils, all the different Crowley oils. And so I had to deal with quite a few OTO characters. And I mean, they were the nicest people you'd ever meet and very intelligent.
Yeah, sure. I know many of the, coordinators
and, you know, threw me onto some great works, some beautiful books, Ishmael, etc. I mean, just some really good stuff. But
I'm the same. I've never joined an order in my life. I despise the idea of joining any types of fraternities, but I know many writers and coordinators in the OTO. I sit down, I have conversations with them about their path. They're amazed that I know a lot about it because I studied it thoroughly. You know, I've researched and read all of Aleister Crowley's works. We have these wonderful conversations. I can sit down with a Christian and I can recite the Bible to them better than they know it and explain the background of it like I do on my website, and we can have wonderful conversations, both people learning something. I can go and talk to the Black Islam movement and talk about Louis Farrakhan and what their whole, you know, thing is and what their particular slant is. I can sit down and talk to a rabbi and say, hey, you know, I'm extremely familiar with your religion, and I can tell you about Judaism, and I know about the synagogue, and I know about the divisions within your own religion of the Sadducees and the Pharisees, you see, and all the different interpretations and the Torah and the Midrash and the Talmud. You know, we need to lose all these stupid prejudices. Be in what you're doing, but don't make it a flag that you wave in other people's faces. We live in an incredible world here, and lots of people have the answers. Lots of individuals, you know. I'm just reading this work called, a book called Ritual by a guy called Maladoma that I highly recommend as well. He's a guy from Africa. His name is Maladoma Patrice Somme, and his book is called Ritual, Power and Healing and Community. You know, another man from Africa who's trying to bring back the old gnosis of how to get back in touch with ritual so that we do heal ourselves, that we are able to do it, and he's sharing his insights, which are absolutely mind-boggling, on how man has been mechanized, on the system in which man has lost ritual, so that gods are now frowning upon mankind and don't want anything to do with us because we basically hung up the phone on them, and then we're wondering why the gods aren't working in our lives. Well, listen, you got to disconnect on your phone.
Yeah.
Now, he tells you how to get back in connection with your ancestral spirits and things like that. So the individual, the human is here to learn. The human is here to leave the planet in a better state than the way he found it.
That's what I've always thought. I mean, you know, that's what we're here for, is to better ourselves. And, you know, hopefully that's what we strive for, all of us.
And another area that, you know, I talk about in the DVDs is very important as well. And especially since you're in the media, this will ring true to you. Because, of course, you and I probably get a lot of emails and a lot of people telling us how frustrated they are and, you know, that they just hate this and they hate that. And they, you know, they have these conversations with their family and their friends around, and they're always talked down. And then they maybe even try to call in to Bill O'Reilly or some of these other radio stations, and they try to share, or they try to call up C-SPAN, and they just get, you know, completely boulderized. And my message to people who are into the subject matter that we are into is this. Look, first of all, unless somebody asks you about any of this stuff, just stay silent. That's the golden rule right there. Do not share any of this with anyone unless they come to you. And even then, you should be very, very economical. Conserve your energy for the studying, for the researching, for the gathering of the data, and for the gathering of the facts. And do not share it with anyone cheaply, conversationally, because this is a sacred subject. And I mean every letter, capital, S-A-C-R-E-D. When you are discovering what the world is, what the hidden truth about politics is, the hidden secrets behind religion, in everything that we are doing, it is a religious work. It is sacred. And I don't care if you're a Christian or you're a Jew or you're a Muslim or you're atheist. If you are doing the research and the work that exposes the satanic, Luciferian, adversarial properties, you know, and devices of mankind, then you are, whether you like it or not, doing spiritual work. Therefore, honor it as such and do not sell it before swine who may abuse you and abuse the knowledge. That's the first thing. Then the second thing. If you are not at the point where you do want to go and start writing on it, or teaching it, or broadcasting it, then you have to need another kind of ability. And that ability is eloquence. That means that now that you have chosen to call up, you know, and rebut or refute, or get into the face of other people and go forward and be a truth seeker and a truth giver, then you must do it in cold blood. You cannot be emotional, you cannot get all pessimistic, you cannot care what other people think. And you primarily have to be very, very eloquent. You must be absolutely conversational, and you must have your facts together, because you must study the other side and know how these Bill O'Reilly types work, or they're just going to shout you down and misinform you and try to boulderize you. And the way that you respond to them is by pulling out documents and going, okay, mate, here it is, here it is, here it is. Fact, 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 fact. But you see, very few people who come on well-meaning. They're all well-meaning. They're all trying to do their best. They're getting boulderized because they don't have their facts. So for goodness sake, don't bother going on there if you're not eloquent, and don't bother going on there and getting into these debacles and getting so embroiled unless you have your facts. So people then go, well, how am I going to get the facts? Well, people like myself, Michael Tesorian, Jordan Maxwell, we've made the DVDs, we've made the books. Our job is as manufacturers of those facts for you.
Well, both of you have done incredible jobs on those facts. And unfortunately, we're running out of time here, so we're going to have to close this up. But your website, again, is taroscopes.com.
Yeah, all one word, with one T and plural, taroscopes.com. From that site, you can get to my blog to leave comments. I've got a blog. People can come on there and leave me comments. They can go to the Origins and Oracle sites for, to update. In a couple of weeks, all the DVDs will be ready. And all this material that we're creating, both the free stuff on the websites and the stuff for sale, is precisely for that, is to get the message out to those who don't know any better and don't know any of this stuff. But it's more than that. It's wholesaling. It's manufacturing. It's manufacturing truth. So
there
that people like yourself and other individuals who are now going to take up the reins and say, hey, I'm part of this. I want to, you know, I'm not going to listen to any of this rubbish anymore. You know, I'm not going to listen to these doctors that I keep meeting and these fake politicians and these fraudulent media people. But I want to engage them, but I want to engage them in an educated way. I'm not going to get into fist fights. I'm not going to get into arguments. I'm going to present facts that's going to leave them completely stum so they can't even argue back. And that is the way to do it. That's the way that you do it in any academic subject. And this is exactly the same way that you do it. You have to have reverence and you have to treat the subject like it's golden, precious. So the things that we've produced are, yes, they're for the masses, but they're also for that coterie of enlightened ones who want to go forward with the facts. We're hoping to present those. Not all of them will be, you know, accurate. Some areas we may differ, may have made a few mistakes here and there, but the general idea is that we're presenting, you know, an encyclopedia of incredible information here that hopefully will help people on the individual level, and then if they do want to engage other people, they've got the facts so that they are fully empowered, 100% empowered, so that they cannot be shouted down by imbeciles who are part of the consensus trance, you know, mentality.
I hear that. Well, I sure appreciate you coming on here for us, sharing this wealth of information that you have.
Well, I thank you for providing that platform. My God, what you're doing is crucial because, again, like I said many times, if we didn't have people like yourself, then the airways would be dead, and then we'd really have a problem.
Yeah,
you
are
to be commended for the work that you're doing, my friend.
Well, thank you very much. And, you know, like I've said before, you're more than welcome to come on anytime and share with us any type of rant, or if something's frustrating you and it's not getting done, come on here and talk to us about it.
Well, what we'll do is I'll get you some of the DVDs when they're done, get those, and then we can come on and talk about those specifically, about the content in the DVDs. We'll do a whole show on Atlantis when the DVDs are done.
That would be great. Thanks a lot, Michael. I appreciate that. I look forward to that very much so. Everybody, you've been listening to Michael Tesorian here on The Bunker on ReviewerRadioNetwork.com. I'm going to play a short song, and I'll be right back with you and finish off this show and give you Michael's websites and how you can contact him, and I'll catch you on the flip side of this. Thanks for tuning in.
My life duty. Let me talk about duty. Why? Because it needs to get done. This administration has failed to do it. And now we have an urgent duty. We should do it now. Do it. Do it well. If it feels good, do it. Duty, 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 duty. Everybody. Duty, duty, duty. Do our duty. Duty, 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 duty. Everybody. Duty, duty, duty. Do our duty. Yeah, I'm talking about a massive situation. Let me just put it to you this way. The situation could hardly get worse. You know how I know? I feel this terrible sadness. Is there hope for me? Do I have a chance? And frankly, do you? Duty, 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 duty. Everybody. Duty, duty, duty. Do our duty. Duty, 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 duty. Everybody. Duty, duty, duty. Do our duty. A great duty has been done. This has required extended duty. Sometimes duty is hard.
Where there is suffering, there is duty.
America's duty is familiar. We accept that duty in our time. We must keep our focus. We must do our duty.
His purpose is achieved in our duty. And our duty is fulfilled in service to one another.
Duty, 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 duty. Everybody. Duty, duty, duty. Do our duty. Duty.
Everybody. Duty. 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 Do our duty.
Duty. Duty. Duty. Duty.
Duty.
Everybody.
Duty. Duty. Duty.
Do our duty.
Duty. Duty. Duty. Duty.
Duty. everybody. Duty, duty, duty. Do our duty.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revere Radio Network. Remember, Revere Radio Network is listener-sponsored radio. Now, it's not all about the Benjamins, but believe me, that shit helps.
Welcome back to The Bunker here on RevereRadioNetwork.com. I hope everybody enjoyed that interview with Michael Tesserian as much as I did. Man has a lot of information to share with us. So I was very thankful for the 2+ hours he came on to share his information with us. And those are some great questions, by the way, everybody, that for the last hour, I really appreciate those. Those are definitely tight ones. I enjoyed them, so got us both a little fired up there, and definitely dug that. So, and if you want to contact Michael also, it's pretty easy. All you have to do is go to taroscopes.com. That's taroscopes.com. That is plural, taroscopes. And you can go there and contact him through there. And also get his books and DVDs. And his DVDs, like we were talking earlier, coming out in a couple weeks. I really look forward to checking them out. And that way we can have Michael back on and talk about those and the information he's sharing with us through those. And definitely look forward to that. Next week I have Mr. Lopan coming on, and we'll be talking about sovereignty. And we will be talking about a couple other topics, and I'm sure he'll want to bring up this interview tonight, because I know he enjoys listening to Michael as much as I do, and I'm sure he'll have a few things to say about it. And if anyone has any comments on this, you can always go to revereradionetwork.com. You can go to the forum, and in the forum, go to the feedback section, and you can leave whatever feedback you want. And that also there you will find links to Michael's website. So look forward to your feedback and your comments. And if you need to contact me via email, you can do that, dwolf420@yahoo.com. Thanks again for tuning in to From the Bunker. We have a 9-hour block coming at you next from Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio 9-hour block, that's what it is. Sorry, blah. It's from nwowatcher.com. And it's a great thing to hear and check out. If you have an iPod, it's perfect for that. So 9 hours into a 90 meg, 100 meg file. So it's great for your iPod. And they have, you know, like I said, lots of good interviews and some good music and all kinds of crazy stuff from throughout the week. So they put some time putting it together every week, I'm sure. So definitely worth a check out. But thanks again for tuning in to From the Bunker here on RevereRadioNetwork.com. And I'll catch everybody next week. Peace.
Your cell phone, your wallet, your time, your ideas. No barcode, no party, no ID, no beers. Your bank card, your license, your thoughts, your fears. No SIM card, no disco, no photo, not here. Your blood, your sweat, your passions, your regrets, your profits, your time off, your fashions, your sex, your pills, your graph, your tits, your ass, your laughs, your balls. We want it all. Your ears, your digits, your plans, your number, your eyes, your schedule, your desktop, your details, your life. Show us your children, your photos, your homes. Here, take credit, take insurance, take a loan, get a job, get a pension, get a haircut, get a suit, play the lottery, play football, play the field, sports out good. We'll show you food, we'll show you spoon, we'll buy you drinks, throw away your book, we'll sell you crap, we'll charge you debt, wanna buy big guns, we'll want the cash. No facts, no freaks, no skaters, no tweakers, no truth, no sleep. Here's boy bands, here's Maccas, here's Whitney, here's cola, here's pizza, here's TV, here's some rock, and some roller. Watch commercials, more commercials, watch Jerry, not Oprah. Buy a better life, from the comfort of your sofa. Here's popcorn, here's magazines, here's milkshake, here's blue jeans, here's padded bars, here's armpit wax, here's football shirts, here's baseball caps, here's live talk shows, here's video games, here's cola life, here's tin morning, here's filter tips, here's collagen life, here's all night mold, here's plastic hips.
Your house, your taste, we want your soul,
your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your soul, your so